saddest moments I wish I knew what I had to do. And even though the sun is shining, well, I feel the rain. Here it comes again, dear. And even when you showed me my heart was out of tune, but there's a shadow of doubt that's not letting me find you too soon. The music that you gave me, the language of my soul, Lord, I want to be with you. Won't you let me come in from the cold? Then I create a silent movie, you become the star. Is that what you are, dear? Your whisper tells a secret, your laughter brings me joy, and a wonder of feeling that nature's own little boy. But still the tears keep falling, they're raining from the sky. Well, let the ladder take us to go under before I get high. Don't let the sun disappear. Don't let the sun disappear. Don't let the sun leave. Oh, you can't believe in my life.
Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, January 20th, 2020. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you were listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to National Liberty Alliance and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please donate support National Liberty Alliance by donating $5 a month or more. You can click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up on our scripture reading where we left off last week in the Gospel of Mark. Gospel of Mark, chapter 9, verses 14 through 29. And when he, Jesus, came to his disciples, he saw a great multitude about them, and the scribes questioning with them. And straightway all the people, when they beheld him, were greatly amazed, and running to him, saluted him. And he asked the scribes, What questions ye with them? And one of the multitude answered and said, Master, I have brought unto thee my son, which have a dumb spirit. And wheresoever he taketh him, he teareth him, and he foameth, and he gnasheth teeth, and pineth away. And I spake to thy disciples, that they should cast him out, and they could not. He answered him and said, O faithless generation, how long shall I be with you? How long shall I suffer you? Bring him unto me. And they brought him unto him, and when he saw him, straightway the spirit tear him, and he fell on the ground and wallowed, foaming. And he asked his father, How long is it ago since this came unto him? And he said, Of a child. And oftentimes it hath cast him into the fire and into the waters to destroy him. But if thou canst do anything, have compassion on us and help us. Jesus said unto him, If thou canst believe, all things are possible to him that believeth. And straightway the father of the child cried out and said with tears, Lord, I believe. Help thou my unbelief. When Jesus saw that the people came running together, he rebuked the foul spirit, saying unto him, Thou dumb and deaf spirit, I charge thee, come out of him, and enter no more into him. And the spirit cried, and rent him sore, and came out of him. And he was as one dead, insomuch that many said, He is dead. But Jesus took him by the hand, and lifted him up, and he arose. And when he was come into the house, the disciples asked him privately, Why could not we cast him out? And he said unto them, This kind come forth by nothing but by prayer and fasting. That was the Gospel of Mark, chapter 9, verses 14 through 29. Okay, we're going to probably focus in particularly on hang on a second. Okay, yeah, we're probably going to focus in on militia tonight. I'm keeping getting these things on video, so it's kind of disturbed me. Hang on a second. Stop video. Okay, thanks, whoever stopped videos. No videos in this room, mostly because it does distract people. I know we have the option for text too, but we don't do that because it distracts people. We want to focus in on the issues of the day, the things that we need to learn, and so on. So we don't, allow videos and also texting. All right, I see. I know there was someone that wanted to, hang on a second. Again, I'm getting all these things coming at me. Okay. All right, anyway, I believe Chuck Thompson is here. Maybe we can unmute him. I think he might have, I think he wanted to talk a little bit about the issues of the day, particularly with the militia. Terry, can you unmute Chuck?
I think he's muted himself. Give it
Well, that's right. I have it.
There he goes.
Star six. Okay.
Okay, can everyone hear me?
Yep, go right ahead.
Hi, good evening, everyone. This is Chuck Thompson. We were at the VCDL day event in Richmond, and it was quite a day. It was stunning. Tens of thousands of people gathered with guns all over Richmond to protest the violations to our unalienable rights to protect and defend ourselves. There was a lot of fear-mongering prior to this event to keep people away from the event. And still, tens of thousands of people showed up with guns. There wasn't a single incident while we were there. Not one negative thing. The police were incredibly helpful, incredibly nice. They were there to help us in every way. I'll state what one of the police officers specifically stated to us. It's not you guys that we were worried about. It's the others who Soros and Bloomberg had financed to come in that we were worried about. And what they were talking about was Antifa. Antifa was believed to have been busing 7 busloads, and they were supposed to be there to create all kinds of havoc. Well, if they were there, not a single incident. There were well over 30,000 guns. With 30,000 guns, that creates a very polite society. And that's what an armed society does. It creates a polite society, not a violent society. The media has it completely wrong. When we left today, we left the city cleaner than what we found it. Garbage that was there for days, we picked up. And the city was beautiful when we left. So to call gun owners trouble or disturb people is completely wrong. We were all level-headed. Not one shot was fired anywhere, despite the thousands upon thousands of guns everywhere. Not one shot. Not one incident. What we heard later on about 1:30 in the afternoon is that one person was arrested because they would not take off a mask, which sounds like Antifa. So if that's the only incident, how can the media spin that? The media is at a loss on figuring out how to spin today because they've never seen anything like it. Despite all of the challenges and all of the pressure put against us to not show up, we showed up. Because to not show up is to acquiesce to them. And we did not acquiesce, not at any time. We were all together, and we were all friendly. And like I said, it was a spectacular day. We were all freezing. It was cold as all get out. But again, not an incident. But I think that pretty much gets the point across. Any questions?
Hey, Chuck.
Yeah,
Gerard here. Didn't the governor declare a state of emergency and ban all weapons from the area?
It was banned around the Capitol. There's actually gardens and pathways and walkways all around the Capitol. They put up a fence around that. Guns were not allowed in that area, but guns were allowed outside that area, and that's where all of us were. There were a number of people in front of the Capitol that did not have guns because there's only one way into that area and no way out except for the, right around the same way they came in. So people were kind of cattle herded there. And so they didn't want any incidents there. But what's interesting also, there was no reason for any kind of violence whatsoever. And the governor wasn't even there. He refused to show up today. The Democrats, who were supposed to be there, and were supposed to be there by law because it was a lobby day, didn't show up. They were all afraid. And there was no reason to be afraid. Except for the fact, if you're doing something wrong and you're trying to take away people's rights, maybe you should have some fear. But we weren't there to harm anyone. We were there to show that you can't take away our rights without consequences, but there wasn't an incident. Any other questions?
I also heard that they backed off the legislation, but then I read another thing say, well, they didn't really back off. They just changed the name and stuck it somewhere else.
That's exactly correct. And they made it worse. They made it more detrimental. It's by far more reaching. So are they going to continue to push through with it? Yeah, we suspect that they are. And so we're going to have another gathering in Richmond, again, to show the force. And we're going to have to take every kind of action, legal action against them in every way. But what they keep showing us is they have no regard for our laws and have no issues with breaking our laws, but they expect us to follow their illegal laws. We don't understand that. So basically, we're taking their cue and just refusing to follow.
Well, I understand the sheriffs are standing together. I saw a video where the one sheriff wanted the four sister counties to come together, and he stood up in front of that county meeting and said, "And I'm not enforcing any unconstitutional law." So if the sheriffs will stand together, that's the answer for the people, because the next step is to arrest one of these legislators or whoever's pushing this and arrest them for treason.
Yes.
And have them indicted and the governor. They should arrest the governor. They should start with him. And it should be a group of sheriffs. It shouldn't be one sheriff. It should be a group of sheriffs.
There was a group of sheriffs here today, and they stood behind a sign saying that they will not follow any of these illegal unconstitutional laws.
So yeah, very important to get them together.
Reporting that.
Yeah. So that's your pushback right there. You know, I mean, as far as if the sheriffs will get together behind the people, because that's actually, you know, the first line of the militia. The sheriffs can deputize and they can actually get the militia going themselves for something like this. So if they see the mm-hmm. sheriff standing together, that's when they'll back down, because they'll know that their skin is on the line. And I think that needs to be fostered. And those sheriffs need to, educate themselves as to their authority, which is we've been trying to do, you know, with some of our militia stuff and the power of the county sheriff and that. And people need to download that stuff and distribute it to their sheriffs, you know.
Yes.
So I'm plugging that here with you talking about it, because this is an excellent time to push that stuff right now. It's very important. But thank you.
Another interesting thing that happened today, too, and actually it's been being pushed for the past 3 days that I'm aware of, is West Virginia is willing to accept any county in Virginia to cede Virginia and become a part of West Virginia.
Oh, I read that. Yeah.
These kind of laws.
And they said that it's still standing on the books, because when it was formed, there was so much chaos going on, they never really stood down that offer, because, you know, it was during the war and there was stuff going on. And so that offer is still a valid offer to cede and go to the other state. You know, I mean, it's constitutionally sound.
And they're pushing it now. West Virginia is pushing it, and there's a lot of people here in Virginia listening. So we've got options.
That's very interesting.
That's interesting times here in Virginia. Not necessarily good interesting times, but very interesting times, no question.
Well, you know, it's time it comes to a head, and this is part of all that. Everything's going to come to a head, I think, you know, probably this year. And so, you know, timing is everything, and it's perfect timing. You know, time to wake the people up and let them understand. You know, once the people wake up, that's the sleeping giant. You know, when the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, the general said, "We've woken a sleeping giant," because he knew. Because back then, Americans were armed. Everybody was armed. You know, they had no idea how many guns. They just knew that everybody had them. And they knew if they had to come in here on our homeland that they would not fare well. And they knew that. And they knew the American people had a very great industrial, you know, complex that was going to kick into full gear in this war. So that general was pretty schooled, and he understood that America was actually a sleeping giant that they awoke in the Second World War.
And that still stands today. The Russians are well aware of that, as well as the Chinese.
Absolutely.
It's interesting. They are actually watching what's going on. The media is at a loss for, again, what happened today. They have no idea how to spin this. Whatever they're spinning, we've taken over 1 million pictures between the tens of thousands of us. We've got videos everywhere. We've caught them actually planting false evidence, and we've got pictures and videos of them doing it, so they can't use it. And any kind of spin that they try to create, we spin it right back and show them what the real truth was. There was too many of us here to see what happened for them to spin it against us.
And that's a good thing. And you also had a Virginia senator, the lady there, came through and said this is a trap for the Patriots. They're gonna create something to try to trap you guys and outlaw, you know, militias and guns and MAGNA, you know, people for Trump. And I think that went a long way to cooling their jets, because she called them out. And it's very hard for them to do what they're going to do when they've been called out ahead of time. And that's happened a couple times in the past couple of years since Trump's been in office. As soon as they get called out by an official, they back off, you know. Takes the wind out of their sails, I believe.
It definitely took the wind out of their sails today. Like I said, it was just an absolutely incredible day. And there's just no way they can actually legitimately spin it the wrong way.
Well, that's a wonderful thing. I was a little worried about what was going to happen, because I know that, look, they're looking for chaos. They're looking for any excuse. I also heard, I didn't see it myself, but that, you know, I'm secondhand information here, but I heard rumor that the governor tried to call the UN in, and Trump had to stop it. That they were going to call the UN in, you know, to come in and go after the people with guns or whatever.
Can you imagine that?
Treaty. Yep.
That would be an act of war.
Absolutely. You know, Trump would be forced to call up the National Guard, the militia at that point.
Yeah. You know?
Well, they were already there.
Yeah, yeah, he didn't have to call them up. They were already on the scene with the with weapons in hand.
Guns of every kind of imaginable caliber. 50 calibers were even there.
No kidding.
Yeah, people were walking around with 50 calibers.
Politicians are death afraid of 50 calibers. I don't know why. I'd be more scared of a 22, to tell you the truth. But 50 calibers is like, woo! Oh, they could shoot me from a mile and a half, 2 miles away, you know?
Exactly.
You're not going to get shot from 2 miles away. Someone's going to shove a 22 in your gut, I hate to tell you. And it's much more painful than a 50 caliber, which you won't even feel. But anyway, that's a good thing.
You guys did it right, Chuck. And you set the example. If they try this again, they're going to have to do something different. And I think you guys kept it peaceful. And everybody that was there did the right thing. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you. Actually, one of the things I was announcing several days ahead of time is, what could they possibly do? We have 30,000 guns at least. What are you going to do with people with 30,000 guns? Are you really going to try and start something? That's insane.
Hey, Terry, when you get a chance, you might want to try to adjust your microphone. You seem to be over-modulating. But go ahead, Chuck. Anything else you want to share with us? By the way, if anybody wants to make a comment on this or ask a question, you can hit *6. But while other people are talking, keep your mic off by doing the same thing. Again, hit *6 to silence your mic.
Okay, well, that's it for me for now. I'm going to silence my mic unless there are any questions, and I'll on silence and answer them.
Okay, I'm sure we'll be talking about this issue some more as we go on. I see someone from California wants to pipe in, maybe. We go right ahead. I thought they were. Did someone mute them, or did they mute themselves?
I'll try to unmute them. I don't know. It doesn't seem to work.
Okay. I guess they don't want any. Okay. What we're going to do is going to move on forward with our regular programming. We're not going to be focusing in on any subject matter other than, I think, on this militia thing and some of the things we're doing. You know, we are writing a paper concerning what's going on with the militia and the guns, all of these assault on our Second Amendment right, or actually our unalienable rights, that is protected by the Second Amendment, which is a better way to put it. And we're also doing something with the IRS. We're working on a paper on that. So we're working on two papers right now. I'll be sending an email out maybe tomorrow Anybody that is interested that has a problem with the IRS, no matter where you are in process, if they're just starting to assault you with all their paperwork, or if they're pulling you in or trying to pull you into their administrative process, or maybe they already have, or even if they pulled you into quote-unquote tax court, which is no court at all, you know, whatever stage you're at, if you have a problem with the IRS and you want to join up with our papers that we're going to be filing with the United States Supreme Court, because we're going to bring it back to their door. They're responsible for this. The issues of both the IRS, they have created a platform that allows them to actually operate out of every federal district court in America. And that's a crime. And they give them the appearance of being something of authority and of law, and they are not. And so, therefore, this belongs at the feet of the United States Supreme Court. It's up to them to step up and do something and correct these lower courts and shut down all of these activities that are taking place within the federal district courts that is not only just unconstitutional, downright subversion against the United States of America, subversion against the people themselves and our laws. Same thing with this gun issue. You know, we're going to take the position, the righteous position, that when these people get into office and use that office as some springboard to bring forth socialist ideas and socialist you know, trying to bring us into a socialist country, a nation, and thereby destroying our Constitution, because you cannot have socialism without Constitution. They have to destroy it. And, of course, they've already done that in the courts with Rule 2. They've totally destroyed our courts of law. They don't exist. They've concealed them. They're still there, you know. The structure of government that we created is still there. All of the proper agencies, the lawful agencies, are still there. There's a couple that are unlawful. But the whole structure of government that is there and is in you know, ultimately in good health in a sense. It's just that it's being driven and controlled by tyrants, people who have come into office, who've raised their hand to swear to protect and uphold and defend the Constitution, and as soon as they get in office, they use it as a springboard to destroy that Constitution. We're going to, again, put a paper together. We're going to be calling for a grand jury very shortly again. As a matter of fact, I'm going to give a date for this, and we will decide on whether we may push this away or not. Probably the sooner the better. Well, we've got to put things together, so I'll probably be a little later. Let's shoot for next week sometime, and I'm thinking... Hey, when did we do the last one? What day of the week did we do the last one? Was that a Thursday night? Does anyone remember, Terry?
Yeah, it was Thursday night.
Okay. So let's look at not this Thursday, but next Thursday. Maybe someone could look up the date of next Thursday. We will put it out in a paper, and I think that's the 30th. I'm looking at a calendar. 24th is this Thursday, the 31st is the next Thursday. But I'd like to just say something about how we proceed with this process. We put the evidence together. If you go up online on National Liberty Alliance right now and you highlighted grand jury and you come down two jumps down and you'll see indictment consideration. And that's the paperwork we put up for the last indictment consideration. But I'd like to read a paragraph we put up there and make it clear, because someone was a little concerned. They said, well, we didn't get a chance to debate the issue and talk about it and go and so on and so forth. And I'd like to read this paragraph in response to exactly that. We do put all the evidence up there. If we can get these people to come in and we can talk to them and ask them questions, that would be great, but that's not going to happen. So that possibility of talking to the accused is not possible, or even to the witnesses is not possible. But we do have documentation, okay, and that's what we post. Now, we did meet last Thursday, and we did indict unanimously. Two people made an error, and they both said that they made that error to vote against the indictment. So we originally had, I think it was like 70 people or something like that. But in any event, it became unanimous when those two people withdrew their positions on that. So it was a unanimous decision to indict Governor Ralph Northam for treason. Well, actually, we went a little lower than that. We went to, still it's an act of treason, but it's more subversion, and we put in a code that applies up to 20 years in prison. But the next time, as we move forward, and including with Governor Ralph Northam, because we're going to be putting some papers forward to him too, if he doesn't stop, then we're going to seek the treason against him also, and all other politicians who are using their office, especially the senators and the congressmen, you know, in the United States Congress and the United States Senate, especially those people and governors who are utilizing their position again to destroy the Constitution and not to protect and preserve it. You know, one of the key points that we're going to make in this is the Bill of Rights is non-negotiable. If they think they can change the Bill of Rights, they're insane. That is an unalienable right. The Bill of Rights was written for the sole purpose of protecting our unalienable rights. They cannot remove, license, lessen, or change those things. And we have a lot more than what's expressed there in the Ten Amendments. But in any event, the right to defend ourselves, the right to have a militia, the right to be the militia, and in our process, we the people, are the militia. You know, Brent made a point a couple of weeks ago that you don't really register for the militia. You don't really join the militia. You know, you are the militia. And that's true. You know, as soon as he made that statement, I started thinking of different things that I had seen, particularly in New York State Constitution, which says all the people are the militia. All the people of New York are the militia. And they don't even discern with an age, nor do they even discern male or female. They just said the people of New York are the militia, and it's their duty to respond to the protection of the state, to protect the borders.
That's because it's so bad here, John. We need everybody.
Yeah. and I see Virginia has a strong, opinion, or not opinion, but a statement on that also, and many, many, many states, if not all of them. They probably all do, maybe. But I'm coming through here. Hang on. All right, I'm going to move over from muted to Q&A. But if anybody has a question or comment, they can get into the queue by hitting a star 6 and then I believe a 1. Okay, anyway, as I was saying, most states have a strong right to bear arms and militia clause in it. And so, you know, again, they're trying to change a common law. They're trying to eliminate an unalienable right to protect ourselves, and particularly to protect ourselves against government, because it seems that every government eventually just turns on the people. It's just, you go back to history, it's constant. They suppress the people. And any government that allowed the people at some point in time to have weapons, to bear arms, and when they started to take those rights away from the people, then they went out and killed millions. We did a paper on that once, and we'll probably apply some of the things that we had in that paper when we go into the gun issue to discuss these things and to make these papers up that we're going to file. But anyway, getting back to the indictments, let me read this paragraph to make it clear to everyone to understand. The grand jury, and this again is on our website, nationallibertyalliance.org. Highlight grand jury on the blue bar, come down 2 steps, indictment consideration. And we will update this with the 2 new potential indictments that we're going to be pursuing. But it says here, the grand jury is not gathered to debate innocence or guilt, but only to hear and decide if there is probable cause to believe that a crime occurred and that the target of the proceeding committed it. The evidence of a possible crime is thereby offered to the grand jury for them to decide. It is incumbent upon Anyone who participates as a grand jurist to view the evidence presented below before the assembly. There will be no debate before the grand jury vote. If we debate the details, then we are considering the opinions of others for innocence or guilt, and not the evidence as one sees it. So the point is we are there to see the evidence. If we could have the opportunity to question people, that would be fine. But to debate this amongst ourselves, we're not there to decide innocence or guilt or to change someone's mind or for whatever purpose people might debate and make an argument. We just need to look at the evidence, and each person decides for themselves. Okay, so anyway, as you read through this, you'll see that the evidence that we had posted concerning this governor. Now, we're going to be posting evidence on two things. We're going to be talking about particularly future, how would I say this, let me think, future actions, and actions that they're already committing, these people. but we're going to be looking for indictments because we want to put the government on notice that we're not going to take it no more. When these people step up and start to preach socialism from a political platform that we elected them to fill for the sole purpose to represent the people and to protect and serve the people and protect and uphold the Constitution. And when they turn around against that and use that for that purpose, that platform, then they deserve an indictment. And so we're going to ask for an indictment that we will apply towards anyone as we move forward in the future that starts to create this platform for the sole purpose of destroying our unalienable right, particularly to bear arms. The other thing is the IRS. But we're also going to be talking about that. The IRS, they love to get the SWAT out there and break down doors in the middle of the night, terrorize people, sometimes kill animals, sometimes kill people. And because they claim a falsity, usually, that someone owes them money. I mean, it's all about a bill that they claim someone owes them. And they never have a proof of a proof of claim, and they never have fiduciary authority. Yet, even without the fiduciary authority, they go and seize our bank accounts, they seize our property, and they just destroy people's lives. They take away any potential of even surviving. You have no money that they close down your bank account, and if they hit your salary and so on and so forth. So this is one of the most evil things that's going on in our government today is this process. And so we're going to be looking for an indictment for anybody, particularly from this point forward. We're not going to look in the past, but from this point forward, if it's brought to our attention that someone's house has been, broken into by SWAT over a bill for the IRS, I mean, all they have to do is call, send a paper out and get them into court. They'll come, and if they don't, they can send out the authorities, but they don't really have the power of the authority to send out the authorities. The authorities are walking around with authority that they don't have, all these IRS agents. But nevertheless, the other thing is these judges that are just denying the law of the land and allowing these tax courts to proceed and to go forward, to have indictments against those as they proceed against the people. In this filing, which we're going to explain that to them, that we've already decided indictments for all that do these things, and we'll list them out. But the other thing we want to really focus in on is anybody who has an IRS situation and would like to do an affidavit and join their affidavit in the case with us, because they are targeting people who belong to liberty groups. We've known that for a long time, and it doesn't make any difference with us. And they've targeted many of us, and that's how they come try to get to us, is through the IRS to put fear in us. And it's time to push back and to make it clear and bring it to the feet, right to the feet of the United States Supreme Court. We're going to nail it to their door and they're to blame. And they're going to have a period of time, and we've been speaking about this for quite some time. We've given them the olive branch, and we will continue to give them the olive branch, appreciating the fact that they, many of them are stuck between a rock and a hard place, you know, sort of a gun to their head. But when that deep state, when it finally, the swamp is completely drained out and cleaned out, at that point in time, that olive branch is no more. That's when they act. That's when they, we expect that they are to act on everything we've been talking to them about or face the indictment. And we will very, very clearly come together to consider indictments on United States Supreme Court justices. There are nine up there, and in my opinion, they're all in bad behavior because they're not stepping up. But on the other hand, again, we realize that they are stuck between a rock and a hard place. There's not too much they can do. Without putting their life in jeopardy. But, again, after that time period when the swamp is drained and the deep state has been eliminated, then we expect them to be obedient to the Constitution and step up and do something and start changing these things in the courts to get rid of this rule two and to acknowledge and to acknowledge to the people the fact that their rules do not apply in courts of law. They apply in equity courts, which is the business of government and not the business of people. They do not apply in courts of law. The rules of common law applies in common law and no more. Okay? It is true that if someone is brought on criminal charges against them and they're working in the government in some agency or something and they are under certain titles, that the government does have a right to bring those title charges up against these people, seek an indictment for those charges. And an indictment if it appears that the person might be guilty of those charges, they should get an indictment on those charges. Just like the people that are going to be tried in the deep state, they're going to be tried on charges, okay, under U.S. titles. But nevertheless, when it becomes criminal, it comes into a court of law, and the people decide, and not the government. The tribunal is still the people. And the people will understand and should understand and should be explained to them, and that again is the purpose of the administrations we are creating across this nation, they should understand that they have the power to nullify those laws if they feel that it's appropriate. But I think in most cases it's not necessarily appropriate to nullify these particular statutes that are applied to someone in power and authority and is abusing that power and authority, and the government would like to see X amount of thing for, you know, years in prison or some kind of a fine. I think that's where a lot of clarity might take place by the people when they may decide something different than to apply the number of years in jail or a certain number amount of money for a crime. Restitution is the key with the hope and the focus to restore the individuals who have committed the crime. Usually the crimes they've committed is against the people themselves in a whole. There is really usually no one focused individual, usually, that has been injured by that. Unless, of course, they were coming out after people and operating under the color of law. So again, every case is so different and all things have to be considered, but titles, statutes, codes, well, particularly statutes, the codes, can be applied in criminal court against someone who works for the government, who has certain authorities and powers and have abused those powers and authorities. Okay, so anyway, we're working on papers, again, for those two issues, dealing with the IRS and dealing with the right to bear arms and the militia.
Hey, John.
Yeah.
I just want to interrupt you for a second because
you're right ahead. I'm thinking anyway. So
there's a common misconception out there, and I ran across it again today in an article, in a media article where the guy was, he's a conservative guy, and he's writing. He's going, you know, They can't just put these gun laws in that they want and they're unconstitutional and they want to control guns. They got to follow the method to change the Constitution if that's what they want to do. You can't just make an unconstitutional law and then try to enforce it. So he's of the opinion that if they get two-thirds vote, they can change the Constitution. Now, that's not the case on unalienable rights. See, that's where they're mistaken.
And that's right, a major point.
Yeah, everybody, they think that the Constitution can be amended to get rid of our rights. That is absolutely false. They can never amend the Constitution to take away any of our rights at all.
Well, there's a couple of things they cannot do with the Constitution. Number one, they cannot violate the rights of the people. So, yes, they cannot make any unlawful laws that would take away an unalienable right. So that's a no-brainer, and that's clear. But the other thing is they cannot upset the balance of power negotiated by our founding fathers, which you can go back into the Federalist Papers and the Anti-Federalist Papers. You can read, and we have them both in audio and in written form, by the way, on our website, so you can actually play the audios and listen to them as you read through, and you can stop and rewind and so on and so forth and really dig into them and see the conversations that took place, the debates. But the key thing here, okay, is that our founding fathers struggled and worked very hard to create a constitution that would bring forth a balance of power between the federal government and all three powers. You know, the judicial power, the legislative power, and the administrative power. Okay, to bring that, but also the power, a balance of power with the states, and most importantly, a balance of power with the people. Okay, so. Because the people have a say of this whole thing. We wrote the law, and we can change the law. But what cannot be changed is the balance of power. And the 17th Amendment destroyed that. When you destroy the balance of power, you're taking power away from a state or the people or even the federal government. The federal government has certain powers and authorities. They've got jurisdiction. We gave it to them, and it was a necessity. And again, if you want to understand how and why, you know, we have that course, Government by Consent, which digs into this quite a bit. But you also have the Federalist Papers that you can go and read through and see the debates. So the bottom line, though, is they cannot destroy that balance of power. The 17th Amendment destroyed that balance of power. And of course, the 16th Amendment, that really enslaved the people. And the 17th Amendment, by the way, enslaved the states. And then Rule 2 just got rid of the Constitution altogether. They may talk about it in public and they debate about it, and maybe in public they'll exercise it. But when it comes to going into the courts, as we the people going into these courts, we quickly, if you're going up against the status quo, big corporations or the government themselves or any agent in government, you will find very quickly that Constitution means nothing to these people and you have no rights in that court at all, period, end of subject. And anybody who doesn't know that is because they haven't been in these courts. Anybody who's been in these courts under these situations, they know because they've experienced it. And that's where we have to stop. This falls at the feet of the United States Supreme Court. They are the overseers of all federal district courts. They have the power of writ mandamus, and they can execute them. Writ mandamus, that is. Whatever it is that ends up, they either obey or they leave office, ultimately. You know, they must obey the law. Congress, of course, should and could pull them out of office. They can impeach them, and so thereby being tried. But if Congress isn't going to do the job, the United States Supreme Court clearly has that power and authority. Matter of fact, there is a code out there, and we'll be using this, I forget the number, but there is a code that requires that anyone who sees subversion or any kind of treason being taken place, you must, otherwise you become part of that treason, you must report it to some judge or the president or a governor. Okay? That means that they have the power and the authority to take it and go forward with it and deal with it and stop it. Okay? And when they don't, they become complicit. They become part of the conspiracy. They now are aiding and abetting when they ignore it. We're going to make that point very clear on all these issues when we bring them to the United States Supreme Court and nail it to their door. And we've been doing that for quite some time. You know, we've been doing that since what? I think we started our decision making on August 14th of 2019. Our court turned over to the point of deciding, acting as the tribunal. We were in court for 2 years with these papers, and for 2 years they acquiesced with everything. For 2 years they ignored us. 2 years we were just met with silence. And silence is fraud when there is a duty to speak. And they clearly have a duty to speak. As a matter of fact, they're commanded to do so in the First Amendment, which is one of our unalienable rights, the right to hear the response and the duty of them to respond to anything that we might address to them. But they address nothing. Anybody who's gone from the lowest form of government to the highest form of government, they address nothing. Nothing but silence. You get met by their filter, their and meaning being their attorneys. All right, so anyway, those are some of the things we're heading forward for. Yeah.
Did we indict that Judge Navarro that was saying there's no constitution in this court? Did we indict her for that? I don't remember.
I don't remember that we did. I'd have to go back into the records to see. We have some. You're talking about on the state levels or on the federal levels?
It was with the trial, the Bundy trial, and that.
I remember.
And both judges, both the one in Oregon and then the one.
We might have indicted them. I
think we did. But yeah. You know, one of the reasons I think these judges don't have a problem saying that is they've convinced them that they're equity courts, that they've
contracted with
these people, and they feel safe saying, no, we're not discussing the Constitution, because they think that they're in there with a contract dispute, and you've already given them permission, and you've got some kind of an agreement with them that you're going to follow their statutes or whatever. They've got these judges bullcrapped into actually believing this stuff, and I think that's why they feel so comfortable going, there's no Constitution here, because they've been taught that this is not a constitutional battle, because they've been taught that all those statutes and codes stood the muster of somebody going through to make sure they were constitutional. And a lot of times they are constitutional if you're applying it to the government but not to the people. That's the difference, right?
Well, absolutely. And, you know, they look for a place to hang their hat. They have no place, but they put up some nails in sheetrock, so to speak, with no wood behind it, no bearing to hold it, so the hat's going to fall off. They really don't have a place to hang the hat, so to speak. But they've convinced themselves. First of all, they're caught most of them are caught up in the bar training schools, okay? And then they go for their bar exams and all this other stuff. So they're really worked on, and they're trained to be the minions of the new world. They've been trained to obey the rules. They've been trained to... when the gorilla in the court, remember, I forget how that lawyer put it, when the gorilla in court asks for a banana, what do? You give him a banana. And who's the gorilla in the court? It's the judge. And that's the kind of teaching a lot of these schools, particularly the bar schools, teach. And so they train them that this is the law. And I have spoken to numerous lawyers concerning common law, and they are absolutely convinced that common law was abrogated, and they have no frame of realization of reference or anything to really appreciate the fact that that's not even possible. They don't understand natural law, common law, so therefore they have nothing to relate to. So they're the New World Order minions, and especially the judges, they've come into it. So, but any judge that's a thinker, and usually the federal level judges are thinkers, some state level too, but unfortunately not many of them either. But if they're thinkers, and they look when it's addressed in the courts, they know that they're walking on very, very shaky grounds, very thin ice, but they do or believe the positions that they're okay, they're protected by the law, and they may even make the statements like that they can't even be held liable for it. But once they step out aside of their authority, their jurisdiction, they're liable, and that's clear. And we remind them of that, and it's in codes, as a matter of fact. So, and in the Supreme Court decisions, their boss has said so, the United States Supreme Court, American jurisprudence. And so we do bring that to issue in our paperwork so that these people do realize and therefore should start to fear us. And I do think they've feared us for quite some time, but I think they're also under the delusion to think that the deep state's not going to be taken out. This is only a four-year thing we have to deal with Trump. Once he's out of the way, we'll be back to normal again. You know, they're self-deceived, just like Satan, self-deceived, thinking at the end of the day they're going to win. And they don't have a clue that not only are they losing already, the day of reckoning is coming, and they lost. They've already lost. It's just a matter of time. And we need to remind them of that. And that's why we write our papers and keep filing our papers and keep putting them onto the doors of all the federal district courts and, most importantly, on the door of the United States Supreme Court. You know, one of the things I did notice, and I don't know if anybody else noticed, but I don't know if everybody saw that sort of that possession type thing where in Congress, when they came together to receive the articles, Chief Justice, Chief Justice Roberts was up there, and it was sort of all, ceremonial, just getting ready. Tomorrow is the day that they actually are going to start sitting, and I think that's going to be a big eye-opening. I think it's going to be huge over the course of the next couple of weeks. But we'll see how that plays out. But nevertheless, I saw Chief Roberts when he was given the papers and he reached out and received those papers. His hands were shaking. And he even tried to move it and move it down a little bit, and it still was shaking. He was very nervous. At least that's what I perceived. I don't know if anybody else perceived that. Maybe people want to go take a look at that and, we can see what others might think.
Well, either that or he's got a really onset Parkinson's.
Well, either that, yeah. But, he's got some baggage with him, and he's already betrayed us because they got something on him. And it may be, we do know that he unlawfully received a child for the purpose of, as a son, not for perverted purposes, but that, he adopted a child illegally, okay? And it's perceived that that is the things that they, one of the things they have on him. I certainly hope there's nothing more than that. We can forgive him of that, I think we can anyway. But nevertheless, he has betrayed us. We'll see how he does here on the impeachment trial. The good thing about it is he doesn't get any decision making. He operates as a magistrate. And by the way, people need to realize this, okay? Donald Trump was given, they call it articles of impeachment, okay? And he's been impeached, he may have been impeached by the Congress, but we have to understand, really, he's been accused by the Congress. Congress acts no differently than a grand jury. They do not decide innocent or guilt. They just make the claim that there's enough evidence to prove that a crime took place and that the likelihood is that the president committed it. That's it. Just like we do when we get together as a grand jury, that's all we decide on. That's all we look at. And so, therefore, they act as the grand jury. Now, when you come in and they can ask questions back and forth to the people coming in before them, you won't see that in the Senate trial. You're going to see a courtroom atmosphere. You're going to see a judge sitting there, the Chief Justice Roberts, who's going to act as the magistrate, sort of the traffic cop of the court, what's going to be allowed and what's not going to be allowed, and he's going to move it forward, okay? But the senators, they are the trial jury. They get to decide, innocent or guilt. But the difference between them acting as a trial jury and us acting as a trial jury, we come as 12, they come as 100, okay? But they have to. They only need 3/4 of the Senate to get a guilty decision. Okay, whereas we need 100%. All 12 got to agree. And at the end of the day, if all 12 come to the realization we're just never going to agree, they got to acquit, not guilty. End of day, end of subject. No, not a mistrial. You don't get to try the person again. They're free, set free. So all 12 have got to vote. And of course the judges, they in these equity courts, they make it up and do whatever they want. So they're not even following the law. But in the Senate, it's 3/4 required to get a guilt. And of course, they'll never get anything. I don't think they're going to get many votes guilty. I think there'd be very few. Of course, these extremists who are really socialist in a thing. That's how that process works. And I think we're going to see a lot of that unfold. As we go over in the next couple of weeks, we're going to see exactly a lot of things that's just going to really come out of this case, I think. But the time of the next 2-3 weeks is going to tell us. Okay. Let me think what else, if anything, I have. Do you have anything else to say, Gerard?
No, I'm done. Thanks.
All right. Jan, is there any announcements? Or Terry, who's handling that? Any announcements or any questions?
Yeah, we have a whole bunch of questions. There's a couple of announcements before that. The first two are that we still do need people. We divided the country into 10 districts for the committeemen, and we're looking for district leaders in each of those 10. So far, we have 5. We're halfway there. The areas where we're still looking would be Area 1, which is Washington State and Oregon. Then the Central Time Zone, which is Region 5, which would be North Dakota, South Dakota, Nebraska, Iowa, Wisconsin, and Minnesota. Right below it, Area 6, that would be Kansas, Missouri, Illinois, Oklahoma, and Arkansas. And then at the bottom of the country, we have Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama, which is Area 7. And then we have Area 8, Eastern Time Zone, which is Michigan, Indiana, Ohio, and West Virginia. So we have those 5 remaining. If you know someone you think would be interested or you would like to volunteer yourself for a district leader for the committeemen, just send me an email, jan@nationallibertyalliance.org.
We do encourage people to work in pairs, so we can use probably 2 district leaders in each district, if we can get 2 or even 3, because it's good to have the people working together in the districts. But go ahead, Jan.
Okay, the other area where we're looking for people is for Gary for the Welcome Committee. This is an area, if you like to talk on the phone, you're verbal, you enjoy chatting with people, by all means give Gary a call. He'll explain fully everything you need to do. They'll train you, provide written materials and everything to get you up to speed so that you can be part of the Welcome Committee and welcome people, new members in, as well as talk to older members to make sure they're still on the same page. And the last thing, I find that there's a lot of people that are not keeping up their My Account information. This is what we use when we get a request for somebody to do something for them, when they want to file a joinder, want us to do other things. If you don't keep your information up to date, we probably can't find you as a member. You need to make sure that your email address is correct. A lot of people, and I did it myself, change their email provider and usually their email address at the same time. All you have to do is go into your My Account, pull up your information, put in your new email address, and you're all set. And while you're at it, check to make sure that you have your telephone number correct. That's another area where we try and reach you because you have a question. And if we don't have the right telephone number, we're never going to find you. So please take a minute. It doesn't take you long. Just log in for your My Account page and make sure that your information is up to date. And that's what I have. Like, we have a number of questions if you're, no one else has any announcements. Right?
All right. Yeah, I just wanted to see. There was something I wanted to add to that. I forget what it was particularly. But, well, anyway, just like I said, you know, we can use more than one. Everyone with National Liberty Alliance that has a position that really, you know, organizing and bringing communications together and doing different things, we all look to have a partner so that, you know, if for a while one person had to disappear for a while, maybe go on vacation or whatever, maybe ill for a while, there's always someone to pick up the load for them. So it's always good to have two people for all these positions. And two people working together, they can help, you know, encourage each other to put the time in and get the jobs done that needs to be done. But, okay, I guess we'll go to any written questions that came in, and we'll be moving along to Brent shortly.
Okay. I'm in Berkeley, San Francisco area, California. In my childhood home for 55 years, the last 11 years, I've been fighting an ongoing dispute in 6 years of litigation against non-judicial foreclosure. Self-represented in the lower courts, organizing through California, and have a few good colleagues ready to move together to defeat non-judicial foreclosure as voided by operation of law. Can we address organizing and strategy amongst NLA members to support one another in our litigations and out-of-court strategies for saving our homes and mounting a serious challenge towards defeating non-judicial foreclosure?
Well, absolutely. And we already are forming, you know, a plan to go forward with all these things. Anybody who does have a non-judicial foreclosure problem, even if you've already lost your home and they've taken it away and it's gone, okay, as long as you could dig up the names of the people responsible, then we can work something out. And, Jen, by the way, let me ask you a question before I continue on that question. Did you recently get a new Internet provider? Because the last couple of months or so, a lot of noise and stuff going on in the background. Well, actually, it sounds like it's coming through. You're sort of like even missing, you know, some syllables here or there.
That is a different internet provider. My main one at home is still the same. I'm on a different one tonight.
Oh, okay. So you're not home?
No, not yet.
Okay.
Until this weekend. Okay?
Okay. We'll forgive you for this then.
Okay. Thank you.
Anything. Okay, going back to this question here concerning the non-judicial foreclosures. So anybody who, you know, again, is going through this process or have gone through it already and they've lost their home, no matter where it's at, you know, you can bring your case to join us with ours. And we are going to be addressing it soon, very soon, directly to the United States Supreme Court. Because, again, they're responsible for everything going on down in these court systems below. When we go into the federal district court in order to get the protection from these courts of jurisdictions unknown throughout the states that is taking our property without due process, okay, they have a duty to protect us. That's what we're there for. We're not looking for a decision. We're looking for protection, for them to acknowledge the law and enforce it and shut these people down with an order to cease and desist. And they refuse to do that. And therefore, this brings us right back to the feet of the United States Supreme Court, who is blessing these non-judicial foreclosures. Whether they realize it or not, we're going to show them how they are blessing it, and therefore they're going to be held liable for this and held personally liable. Unless they do something, and again, when the time comes, when the opportunity for them to stand up, they don't stand up, then they're going to have to pay the toll. So we're going to, you know, we're doing everything we can. We send papers. We do an amicus curiae. When people want to join, they're joined to our case. They fill out a form that says they want to join the case with us. Once we receive that, we do an amicus curiae on their behalf to the court that's causing the problem, that's doing all this illegal activity. And we're telling them to cease and desist and to return these people back to their original state before they were pulled into this nightmare. And they have 30 days to deal with that. And if they don't, then the next step is we move it into federal court that we have opened in the Northern District for cause. And we will protect the people as best we can. Of course, you know, they continue to ignore us, but, you know, it's a drumbeat. It's the blowing of a trumpet as we go around the city and the walls of Jericho, okay? They went around that city. Anybody knows the story? 7 days, one day, every day they went around for 7 days. On the seventh day, they went around 7 times. Each time they went around, they blew the trumpets. And on the seventh day, and the seventh time around, they blew the trumpets, the walls of Jericho fell, and they took the city. And that's what we plan on having to happen by God's mercy at some point in time. The walls of their Jericho, they're the city of Jericho. The walls are going to fall, and we're going to take the city back. So, again, you know, we are bringing all these things. We've had some successes. Okay, we've recently had a success with a habeas corpus. And when we get a success with a habeas corpus, it would be nice if the people who were let out of jail, or at least the people who did the habeas corpus as a friend, they should step up on a Monday night and tell the story. Because it helps to know that there is hope. Okay, but anyway, we've had a success. We've had some successes with non-judicious foreclosures, but it's only been a couple. We will admit that. But I think we're going to have more and more as we get closer and closer, as they start to realize that their protection is starting to fail. Then they're going to start responding. I'm talking about these judges. But anyway, getting back to the process, we then send out a paper ordering the case. We give them 30 days to respond as we move it into the courts, into our federal district court. They have 30 days to respond. If they acquiesce, they default, or if they respond, we'll deal with that accordingly. I mean, bottom line is they don't have the, you can't go forward with a non-judicial foreclosure. But in any event, then a decision is made, an order is put out, and that rests for a little while, maybe a week or two, and we'll give them so much time to gather themselves together and do the right thing. And if they don't, then indictments will come forward. We have already come together quite some time ago as a grand jury to agree that any of these judges that act and continue to act unlawfully by allowing and blessing these non-judicial foreclosures to go forward, and we're going to add the habeas corpuses in with this also, these federal judges that have refused to hear the case when we have passed the case on to them for a proper decision, okay, then we've agreed that these judges will be served an indictment. And so we will be laying out a lot of indictments coming up very soon on a lot of federal judges and a lot of judges in the lower courts, in the state courts, particularly the lower courts in the states. And again, nail them back to the doors of the United States Supreme Court. They are to blame for all of this. All of this. None of this could happen if those individuals upheld and supported and defended the Constitution and exercised their duties. None of this would happen. They would bring these courts back under a proper ruling. But they refuse. Again, they have the olive branch. We'll continue to give them the olive branch because we know they're stuck between a rock and a hard place. But when that protection system is gone, as far as the deep state has been taken out, and then we have, at that point, we will have a power void, a power vacuum, okay? And someone has to fill that power vacuum, and that's we the people. That's what the National Liberty Alliance is all about, to teach the people to fill that void, that power vacuum, okay? So everybody should be involved. And one other thing is a little off subject of what we're just talking about, and that is the militia. Everybody has a duty to sign up for the militia, for the reserve, okay? And so, you know, it's minimum requirements, but we need to participate, all of us. So everybody should go to nationallibertyalliance.org, highlight people's duty, come down to militia registration, and register with the militia in your county, okay? Someone will eventually get back to you. It's going to take a little while. Right now, we're pulling people and organizing, and as we create leaderships inside all of these counties, someone will step up, and we're looking for someone to step up for a leader in the militia, okay? In every single county, there's 3,133 counties, so we're looking for people to step up, at least one or more leaders in every county. And as those people step up and they hit a number, again, we're thinking maybe 6 or 12 people in a county come together, then at that point they've formed a militia. We haven't worked out what that number is yet, but I think it's going to be somewhere between 6 and 12. And when that happens, then that's when you bring together the rules, you adopt the uniform rules that we put together. You add your own local rules as necessary, and resolutions. We have uniform resolutions that we've laid out, and you're going to want to add others. You know, every county has their own situation, their own uniqueness, and they're going to bring the rules and regulations they want. And we're looking not only to build the reserve militia, we're looking also to build, actually, the regular militia. And that regular militia, the way I understand it, and maybe when Brent comes on the line, he can correct me if I'm wrong, but the way I understand it is, because I read this in his booklet, is they look at the townships, but we're looking at counties. So we're breaking the counties up into three parts, okay? And when we get 100 militia in each one of those three breakups. You get 300 people, 300 militia that want to be regular militia, not that reserve militia, regular militia, because we want to build the regular militia alongside with the reserve. So people who want to become part of the regular militia, they're going to be a lot more diligent in coming to meetings, and they're going to be diligent to getting together and to exercise, you know, the military abilities and practices and so on. So When a county gets 300 people who want to be part of the regular militia, and we can break it up into three sections in the county, that's when we will approach that militia, and we'll write up a way to do this, and we'll be behind you working with you on this. That's when the militia will approach the state and serve themselves underneath the authority of the governor, and expecting for the legislators to write the necessary legislation for the control of the militia in that particular county, ultimately in that state, ultimately, but in the counties and in the states. This will probably happen county by county, hopefully state by state as we go along, because the National Guard is too much controlled by the federal government. And there are a lot of problems with some of the things that they put together. Brent has written a booklet on this. We've created a course on this. You can go up to nationallibertyalliance.org, highlight course, and come down, and you can sign into our free militia course. Okay? And that course is created on the booklet that it's about a 100-page booklet that Brent has written. And you can find that when you join that course and you get to the end of that course, you'll see a link where you can buy the booklet. But also, in the beginning, on the page of introduction, you'll see a link to get that particular booklet. And also, on every page of a website, on the right-hand side, if you scroll down a little bit, you will see a militia of the several states, the primer, the constitutional's answer to its enemies by Brent Allen Winters, and it is the Militia of the Several States Pocket Handbook. Every militiaman should have this booklet. Every militiaman, and you are. There's not a person in this room that's not part of the militia. You have a duty to go and read this book. You have a duty to take the course, and you have a duty to register. At least the males do, not the females. And so people need to get engaged here. They need to do their duty. That's what we're here for, is to save this nation. And the only way you're going to save this nation is if people step up and do their duty. Why should we expect the people we elect to do their duty if we're not going to do our duty? They're only mimicking us. They're getting away with it because we're not doing it. And we don't realize this. Of course, also, we have the committeemen. All militiamen should become committeemen at least once in their life. And we need a lot of good men right now, and women, okay, to become committeemen. We need people now. We need thousands of people. So everybody should consider signing up, not only for the militia, to register with them, but also to join or register with the intent to run for committeeman, and we'll start working organizing on that. We have a lot of pages on that also. So if you go under people's duties, there's a lot of pages there, and it gives a lot of information, okay? And on the committeeman, we're teaching people how to run for committeeman, what the process is like, how to fill out the petition that they need to file in order to become a committeeman. So it's called the designating petition. We also have up there proposed party rules, so that when you become empowered, that you come together and bring together a uniform set of rules that also, again, across the counties, across the states, or uniform rules. And you will be adding to that, you know. Resolutions also, and you will be adding to that as you grow and work into the system. So people need to be doing that too. And of course, anybody who wants a job, okay, we're looking for four people in each county to become jury administrators. And instead of the courts handling that job, the people need to handle that job, because it's like the fox giving control of the fox to the hen house to the fox, okay? Obviously, they've proven over 200 years that they're not responsible and loyal enough to take on this job. So the people who are not politically connected, okay, in politics, running for offices other than committeeman, okay, that's the people's duty. But we need to take control of this. So we're going to take this away from them, and four people will be the administrators in every county, and they will call the people up to bring them in as grand jury and trial juries. They will orientate them. They will give them an eight-hour time period where they will teach them and show them what it is that they need to be doing and thinking, and the knowledge they need to have, like, jury nullification and a little bit of schooling on the codes and different things. But 6 to 8 hours is plenty of time. We are creating, we probably even have some of this stuff already. We just have to kind of put it together a little differently. But we're going to put together videos and a handbook for the administrators, videos to show to the people, to educate them, short videos, because that seems to work pretty good to educate people quickly, and also lay out certain points and details that every jurist should understand and know, okay, concerning the common law, the rules of the common law, so to speak. Again, people need to get active in this stuff, so... Okay, let's get back to questions.
The next question, what is a committee man?
Okay, that was a good question. A committee man, every election district has one committee man for each party. And we got to discuss that, two different parties at a later time, because we don't need two parties. Jefferson believed that. Washington clearly believed that. Parties only divide the people, and it brings in the arguments and the debates and all this stuff that has nothing to do with governing us. They shouldn't be getting involved in these things, okay? But anyway, the committeemen we used to be elected, but they've pulled the wool over the eyes again, so to speak. They've created these facades, and every committeeman in the United States, we have not yet found an elected committeeman other than the committeeman that we have taught and other people here in New York have taught others to become elected. So we do have some elected committeemen here in New York. But generally speaking, across America and most of New York, they are not elected. They're part of a private association, okay, called the Democrat and the Republican parties. And there's a lot of noise out there. Can we hit our mics there? Okay. They are not elected. They belong to a private party association. They put a facade up to make them look like they're elected, but they're not. And there are party bosses. That's why they can take control of this whole system. They have party bosses, and it's a top-down structure. And even their voting for individuals, in most cases, to get into office is a con job. It just appears as if you're really voting. Your vote really doesn't count. They get in, they put on the ballot the people that they want. Every once in a while, someone gets by them, of course. You know, but nevertheless, they're the ones that put the people on the ballot. So the committeemen are supposed to come together during the election time. It's about 40 hours a year, if that much. Okay, the odd years is less time than the even years because there's more action and more running for office and, you know, you've got a lot of things going on. All of Congress runs for office. Some senators run for office in the odd year, in the even years. Presidents are elected in the even years. So there's a lot of activity in the even years. So, but there's no more than 40 hours a year. And it's done, you know, you come together in the beginning once you're elected. Once the committeemen are elected, they come together in January sometime, someplace in the state, okay? All the committeemen throughout the state come together in the Republican Party and the Democratic Party. We fuse the two parties together here in New York, by the way. And we're going to operate, once we take power and authority, we're going to operate together as two parties as one. Because ultimately, we'd like to see the parties disappear. There's no reason for them to really be here other than to destroy us. We have a constitution. We don't need party politics, you know. But in any event, you know, you come together for a day, you know, 6-8 hours, and maybe usually the Capitol, okay, and you meet. And you organize. In that one day, all committees are organized. Every political subdivision is organized. You know, you'll come together as the state, and the states will. Everybody will break up into counties, and then the counties will break into their towns, and they'll all work their whole system up, electing and choosing a leadership. You know, they go for a chairman, a co-chairman, a secretary, and a treasurer. So usually 4 to 5 people on a committee. So each town will have 4 or 5 leaderships. Each county will have 4 or 5. The towns will come together and create that within the county. You'll have assembly districts comes together. Congressional districts come together. And then, of course, you got the state as a whole. And the county chairman acts as the seat of power in the state. So New York, for instance, has 62 counties. So we would have 62 county chairmen, and those 62 county chairmen would come together at a later date, maybe another Saturday usually or something, you know, sometime in January. Try to get this done in the beginning of the year, but it runs into February. I think it's written up that this happens in January. So they come together, and they actually they choose a chairman. You know, again, a chairman, a co-chairman, a secretary, and a treasurer. Okay, so they choose their four or five people, and then they break off and they work within their counties. Everything else is done within their counties. You know, you'll come together, you'll muster together. If someone is running in your assembly district for office, then that assembly district will muster together for the sole purpose of interviewing people who want to run for assemblyman in your state, or a senator, you know, if you want to run as senator in your state, or congressional district. If someone's running, then you come together and you decide who you want to put on a ballot, and you have the time to come together to question these people. And you're looking for statesmen, not politicians. The people need to take control and require them to know the Constitution. We can send them to National Liberty Alliance to get an education, come back, and then we'll consider you for office. If you know the Constitution and you're willing to swear to really defend and protect the Constitution and not use it for alternative motives, you know, like trying to push forward, socialism, as long as they can agree to that, then why not? Let's throw them on the ballot, let the people decide. And then we will give them a place on the National Liberty Alliance is going to create a website that goes through the whole nation and picks up on all the political subdivisions throughout the whole United States. And all these people would be putting their, I don't know how many word essay, paper on themselves, 500, 1,000, I don't know how many words we'd want to give them. But they'd write a paper on why people should want to vote for them. And then they should have a link for the website in that paper. So people go up and they'll see who's running in the assembly, who's running in the congressional, who's running for senators, a U.S. senator in my state this year. You know, all of these different things. And then you click on the people and you can read their papers, you can go to their websites, and you can make a decision. We also want to list out the powers and the authorities, the jurisdictions of their authority. And what does they do? Do they appoint commissioners, and who do they appoint? So they need to know this, and we expect them to learn this, and we'll put that together, that knowledge together on the website. And the people who are quizzing them need to know this. And as long as they know it, you know it, and they know it, then everybody knows it. Now they go off and do their job. They get them on the ballot, they go through the process, then they go to the general election, someone gets elected, and we hold their feet to the fire. Okay, so that's the power and the authority of the committee man. Rest assured, if you're in a county and the county chairman, let's say the militia calls up the county chairman and says, we want to approach the sheriff and we'd like to get your support. Okay, well, the committee man will go with you. He can make the phone call to the sheriff and say, we're going to talk to you, and get a date and a time and meeting and lay it out for the sheriff, and the sheriff will comply. He will put whatever the committee man tells them, the chairman of the county tells that sheriff or any elected official, that they need to be doing this or they need not to be doing that, they will obey. That's government by consent. That's how we have government by consent. The people are their bosses. We call them up and we pull them on the carpet. What's going on down there, sheriff? What's going on down there, senator? What's happening there, assemblyman? You see, and it's the people within their districts that call them up and put them straight. That's power. People need to learn this. People need to become part of this. They need to participate. They need to become the committee man at least once in your lifetime. And we need lots of people right now. So this, hopefully, for the people that are hearing and educating, it's once in your lifetime now. We need you now. America needs you now. We, the people, need you now, the people who are getting educated in this process. So that's what the committee man is. It's the most powerful position, political position in America. Jan, do we have many more? Because maybe we should put them off till next week.
Or if you want, we can wait.
Huh?
I have quite a few more. If you want, we can do them next week.
Yeah, if you got something that you think is going to be very simple, you can bring that up. If not, we'll push them off till next week.
Okay, here's a good one for you, John. Now, this person just wants to approach their sheriff with the sheriff's handbook. And they need some guidance on how best to do this.
Yeah, you know what? We have a plan coming up for the sheriff, and hopefully that's going to come out in the next month or two. We're going to lay it out. We're going to write the plan up and put it together on the website, and then people could download the information, prepare for that meeting, how to approach the sheriff, what to discuss, how to get them involved. But the best way to do this, really, is to become a committee man, and then the committee man calls him. Become a militia man, and the militia calls them, because we have a plan for that, too. When the militia becomes six to 12 people, again, we haven't decided on a number yet, when you have X amount of people in a county, then they formally become the reserve militia of that county. And then they will approach the sheriff, and we will lay out a plan on exactly how to do that. What are going to be the things you want to discuss? How to approach the sheriff and so on and so forth. Also, we will, you know, again, we've been working, trying to get a project going on these sheriff's handbooks, but we haven't collected that much. We had a couple of people who gave us some very handsome numbers, you know, amounts, but it's still not enough, anywhere near enough to do what we have to do. But we'd like to pursue that. We're looking for about $60,000, $70,000 to be able to do something with that and get enough handbooks to every sheriff in America. Now, remember, there's 3,133 counties, so there's 3,100 sheriffs, and sheriffs have deputies. So we'd like to get at least 20 handbooks to every sheriff, and some sheriffs will ask for more, hopefully. And we need to bring this to them in a ceremonial way, from within the people from the counties and themselves. Also, you know, the book, I'm looking to get my book published now, and it's going to cover all the stuff on the sheriff. I mean, it's going to cover everything, all the stuff on the government by consent course and a lot of stuff on the sheriff, and it's going to go far beyond that also. There's a lot of information laid out in that book. And that would be a great book to give to a sheriff. We'll try to encourage maybe every trip for the people of the county to come together and get a book to get to the sheriff. That sheriff will have a table of contents, okay, which you'll be able to kind of, you know, breeze right down to see the different subject matters in there. And, you know, once you've read through the book, you can then use it as a reference book and you can quickly find something. We'll also put, I don't know if they want, we call it a table of contents or a glossary. I'm not sure. I think it's a table of contents where we will break every little block issue that runs through the book and put it out there into the index where people can quickly get information, court case decisions, positions, codes, and lots of information, documented information that they can draw from if they want to make a position in court. You can look right through that, and it'll be in an alphabetical form, obviously, and find the subject and get information on that. And you'll find, you know, maybe a lot of parts of the book you can dig out information. But I'm trying to make it a book in such a way that people can glean the information out and use it as a good reference book. It's a book that I know I would carry with me to go into a court to be able to reference Supreme Court rulings and decisions and documents and all the things to, you know, make my position in court. So, anyway, that'll be available. Hopefully, you think, Jen? Do you think we'll finish off with the perfection of the book this week? Or are we still 2 weeks away, or what do you think?
Probably early part of next week.
Okay, so let's say in 2 weeks, hopefully, we'll finish perfecting it. You know, the book is pretty much, it's done, okay? But it's being read by people, and we'll come with comments and making corrections and find errors and you know, those kind of things. But in 2 weeks, I'll be pursuing a publisher, and I don't know how long that'll take, but whatever that takes, it takes. And then it'll be available. But I'm hoping not to have a hard time with a publisher, finding a publisher. I think I found one that might be very interested in this book. But worst comes to worst, I will go up, and there is a way for people to publish their own books, in a sense, and bring them up and get them put together in Amazon and different places. But I really would like to do it from... I'd like this one particular publisher, hopefully, to do it, to publishing on it. And also, I got a paper from a friend a couple of years ago, and he was explaining to me, you know, when you author a book and do different things, on how to get those books into the libraries. So that's something I will try to do also, is to try to get the book into the libraries. But anyway... I think that'll be our last. We're going to move from here, and we'll, any other questions we'll pick up next week. All right, Jan? And there's no more announcements, correct?
No, we're all set then, John.
Okay, Gerard, are you here to take the controls? Are you ready for that? Gerard? Yeah, we're going to move to Brent in a minute, Terry. But I want to find it out if Gerard's going to take the controls. Okay.
I got it.
Okay, I'm going to move to Brent, and as soon as I move to Brent, the controls are yours. Brent, are you here? I see you out there. You're unmuted. Okay, let me introduce you. This is Brent Allen Winters. He's the author of the book Excellence in the Common Law and many other books, the militia book, for instance, that we put on our website and created our course with. His website is commonlawyer.com, and Brent has the mic for a while, and then after Brent, we'll move into Q&A. Anybody who's got any questions or comments, *6 to get into queue. We got about a half a dozen people in the queue right now, so there's not too many. But, hold on. I'm sorry. I clicked that person. Okay, hopefully you didn't fall out of there, Heather Lee. But anyway, Brent, you got the mic.
Thank you. This is Brent. Allen Winters, commonlawyer.com. My comments are my own and not necessarily the opinions or points of view of those of National Liberty Alliance, but they're kind enough to invite me to come on and say a few words, and we have been going through the Constitution of the United States, clause by clause and blow by blow, but in light of the happenings in Virginia, we're talking about the militia, and it is important, it is fundamental, it is at the bottom of all government. At the bottom of all government are two functions, two fundamental functions without which government can't be said to be, and those two functions are armed defense and justice. Armed defense and justice. And those two duties are the duties of the militiaman. The militiaman hasn't always been called the militiaman. That's a very recent name given to this thing we call the militia. The militia that we, our Constitution bespeaks when it says militia, it's talking about the Ferd Fair. That's what it used to be called, the Ferd, F-Y-R-D-F-A-R-E. Fair is a word we still use, not F-A-I-R, F-A-R-E. It means to be a-going. Wayfarer, wayfarer, welfare, fairway. It means something. It's related to a journey and getting on a road and getting moving. And the Ferd Fair, Ferd, we now say militia, and fair means the militia a-going, the militia mustered, the militia up and moving. It is true. You don't join the militia. You're born into it. Why? Because it's a fundamental duty. And right is the old Germanic word for duty, and our tongue is fundamentally a Germanic tongue, Anglo-Saxon. The angels and the Saxons were Germanic tribes. And because they are Germanic tribes, they came from the north of Europe, and in the north of Europe, they had organized and are still organized according to what we call today townships. And the tribes that came to England, the angels, the Saxons, and the Jutes, that's the Danes, more popularly known as the Vikings, the Danish people, and they lived in the same place as the angels and the Saxons, and they all three were a sordid and violent bunch of seafaring pirates. As William Blackstone says in his volumes on the common law, they all were a piratical people, and all those people up there were. Well, Finland, Norway, Sweden, and all of them had what we called hundreds. We still call them hundreds. Delaware still has hundreds. Pennsylvania was organized into hundreds. H-U-N-D-R-E-D. Pennsylvania, Delaware, one other state, which one was it? But the hundreds, and even in those countries in Northern Europe, still organized that way. They were organized into hundreds because it was said that a hundred was an area of land that comprised about 100 men able-bodied to bear arms.
And in every 100, which became our townships in America, by the way, in every hundred was what was called the 100 court. 100, to be precise, the 100 court. The 100 courts persisted in England until about 1977. Well, only vestiges of them by that time, but an act of parliament did away with them. Well, what was the 100 court? It was a township court. And as Blackstone said, it is the glory of our common law that it brought justice to the door of every cottage. You didn't have to walk far to go to court. And the 100 courts were held 12 times a year. Every month, court was held. If you had a problem with your neighbor, you could go in there and complain and bellyache about it and maybe get some justice. Well, why am I telling you this? We were talking about the militia because the duty of the militiaman is twofold, justice and armed defense. Those are the two foundations of all government. If what's said to be a government doesn't do that, it's not a government. It may have power, it may be oppressive, it may do things, but it's not a government. And our government is a common law government. It's not even republic in the sense that most people understand it. We do have a republican aspect to it called the legislature, but that's not what governs our government. We're a common law government. That's what distinguishes us and distinguishes us from pretty near every country in the world. But the 100, the reason the hundreds were formed, we have townships here in America, traditionally, by the way, throughout the Midwest and all the rest of the country, traditionally about 36 square miles, about 6 miles square. 6 miles square. And that's a good principle. It brings what we call the militia right down to the ground, right down to home. These townships could be divided also, I suppose, at this point, into precincts. I knew a fellow that ran for Congress in a big city. He won. He ran against a powerful man in Congress. His name was, a long time ago now, Rostenkowski. Well, old Rosty got into trouble. It was a scandal over the Congress's post office, and this little red-headed fellow ran against him from an Irish community there. He won. He only served one term, but he told me. I ran into him once, and he told me that if he could get the key to one of those big apartment buildings up there in the big city, that he could talk to two precincts sometimes, two precincts in one building. Well, in most of the rest of the Midwest, it wasn't that way, of course. You had to drive a lot of miles to cover two precincts. But the whole idea, and this is something that would have to be adapted to the city, but the whole idea is that the militiaman, if he was there at common law for at least 30 days, he was the militia, and as such, he was required to put his name on the roll of the 100, the township, if he was in residence there at least 30 days. That was the law. That was the law back in the 9th century. Back during the days of King Alfred the Great. So again, there must be a distinction made between joining the militia. You don't join the militia. You are the militia if you're an able-bodied male. And if you are the militia, you have a duty then to put your name on the roll. Now, with your telephone number. Now, that being said, it's important for people that are concerned about their country to make sure that the only two duties that government has to perform are performed correctly. And they cannot be performed correctly unless the people that the law says has to perform them, and this law is more ancient than our Constitution by far. And the law says that the able-bodied males are responsible for armed defense. And from that group is drawn the jury. That's the facts of the matter. That's what history tells us. That's what our Constitution of the United States assumed when the ratifiers ratified it, and I'm not talking about the framers. People talk about the framers as though they were geniuses. They were smarter than the next man on the street. They were just men, yes, and they were the ones that presented it to the people that really made it a reality. Who's that? The people of the United States, the militia. And the word people, we've gone over that, applies to the militia. That is the militia. Who are the militia? They are the people. Who are the people? They are the militia. And we had mentioned that phrase, Ha'am, in the Hebrew tongue, our Puritan forebears brought out of the Bible. There are four militia clauses. Four. The first militia clause delegates a duty only arises out of law, a duty to Congress. The second militia clause delegates a duty to the states respectively. I'm quoting the Constitution. The third militia clause delegates a duty to that class of persons called presidents of the United States. First militia clause delegates duties from the people to congressmen. Second militia clause delegates duties from the people to the states. Third militia clause delegates duties from the people to presidents. And the fourth militia clause, there are only four, the fourth militia clause delegates nothing. Why? Because you're born into it. That's the Second Amendment. And it doesn't delegate to anything. It says a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right. And that's the Germanic word, the Anglo word for duty. Duty. Duty arises out of law. Law doesn't arise out of a deal you make with the government, a contract. It arises out of law. What kind of law? A law from the true lawgiver. What do you mean? I mean, the true lawgiver, the only true lawgiver, the maker of heaven and earth and all that in them is, has bestowed upon a person, any person, every person, at their conception and at their birth, they come with duties. We call them rights. They're inalienable duties. That's what they are. And that's what that old Germanic word means. You have three inalienable, unalienable. Either way, it means the same thing. It means you can't separate yourself from those duties. The duty to life, the duty to liberty, and the duty to property. You have those duties, and with that jurisdiction, with all jurisdiction, comes with it the duty to defend that jurisdiction. You don't like the gift of the duty you've been given of life? Well, then you've spit in the giver, and you've despised the duty itself and spit in the giver of the gift. Spit in his face. Don't do that. You have a duty to protect your life. That's what the militiaman and the militia, as we call it, is all about, protecting your life and the lives of those to whom you're responsible, whoever they may be. Might be your wife, might be your children, might be your neighbor and their children, depending upon the circumstances, but in all events, you have a duty to protect the land that God has given to you. And without land, the duty doesn't really mean much because all that God gives us comes out of the land. Well, let's get back to these clauses quickly. I mentioned those four clauses, four different classes of persons. The first three clauses delegate duties. The last one recognize a duty that's already been delegated and says the government will not infringe upon this delegation of duty from the true lawgiver. Those are called fundamental rights. If they're fundamental, well, I'm going to turn that down a little bit. I was advised before that I come across plenty loud. If they're fundamental, they come from God. That's what a fundamental right is. They're bestowed upon the person, as our Declaration of 76 says, from the Creator. Well, pursuant to that second militia clause, delegates duty to the states. It says this, reserving to the states respectively the appointment of officers and the authority of training the militia according to the discipline prescribed by Congress. See, it refers to the duty of Congress delegated in the first militia clause, but I don't want to camp on that right now. I want to camp on this thing where it says reserving to the states respectively the appointment of the officers and the authority of training the militia according to the discipline Congress has prescribed. Well, the authority of training, let's get back to this. That being true, pursuant to that clause, in the booklet, the militia of the several states, our Constitution's answer to its enemies, foreign and domestic, in the back of that book, on about page 90, 91, 92, something like that. The last thing in the book is a pattern state militia statute. That's for your state legislature. Because the states, respectively, according to our Constitution, the people of the United States, through our Constitution, have delegated to the states, respectively, the duty to provide for the appointment of officers. So what I want to do is, for a little bit of time here left, and then hopefully in the future, I want to go through this pattern state militia statute. And I perceive that it's important that some state legislator get his hands on this and say, you know, this is what we need to be looking at doing. And that's why I wrote it, so that you could give it to your state legislator and that he could take it and put it into practice, put it up for a bill for the state legislature to pass. Let me read it. Preamble. By this state militia statute, the legislature means to protect the rights of the people of this state by enabling the responsibilities that our United States Constitution delegates respecting the militia of the several states. Now remember, our Constitution does not delegate authority to the militia of the several states. No, God did that. And that's what's called a fundamental right. And it plays out in our present day. In our circumstances, the way things are today, that fundamental general principle, that fundamental general right that God has bestowed upon what we call the militiamen, it plays out today, given the technology we have. The principle plays out under the right to keep and carry a loaded weapon, a loaded firearm. That means an arm that spits fire and projectiles. That's why we call them firearms. Deadly fire and projectiles, using compressed and expanding gases to drive the projectile out the barrel of the weapon. Whereas, it continues, whereas the purpose, this is the pattern state militia statute, whereas the purpose of the militia of the several states is to secure freedom and security at the same time. Freedom and security at the same time. Yeah, that's why the militia's there. By first, stopping wrongful taking of life, liberty, and property. Second, protecting our common law government of laws against any government of mere men, whether foreign or domestic. And third, thereby thwarting overthrow of lawful government. And then I list a series of whereas clauses as foundations for why this militia clause should be law. Whereas the militia of this state includes those of the people dwelling within its boundaries, male, between the ages of 17 and 45, could say 20 and 45, and able-bodied to carry and use a firearm. Second, whereas the people of this state recognize and declare the exclusive necessity of our militia to the security of our state and freedom, whereas the people of this state recognize and declare that our United States Constitution is an affirmation of our state's common law militia, whereas the people of this state recognize and declare that the Congress and presidents must draw their authority only from our U.S. Constitution, that said Constitution and each of the several states hold their authority direct from the people of the several states, and that the militia of each state comprise the people of that state. Whereas the people of this state recognize and declare that our U.S. Constitution arranges duties under its four militia clauses among four classes of men, congressmen, state legislators, U.S. presidents, and individual Americans. Whereas the people of this state recognize and declare that we, the people of the several United States of our Union, by our U.S. Constitution, have delegated to the President certain yet limited responsibilities respecting the militia of the several states. Whereas our United States Constitution recognizes concurrent jurisdiction of the militia of the several states, this state's governor having jurisdiction of this state's militia, while the President of the United States also has jurisdiction under restraints and according to the standards and rules our U.S. Constitution and Congress has set for him. Whereas this concurrent jurisdiction of the militia of each state arises from an incontestable dual sovereignty of each of the several states and of the United States. That's according to Prince versus U.S., 521 U.S. 898. It's a 1997 case. Affirms that the militia of each state arises from an incontestable dual sovereignty of each of the several states. Whereas our U.S. Constitution charges Congress alone with providing rules for calling forth the militia. That's a quote from our Constitution, calling forth the militia. Whereas our U.S. Constitution limits the reasons a president can call the militia of the several states or any part of these into the service of the United States to only three. Number one, to execute the laws of the Union. Number two, to suppress insurrections. And number three, to repel invasions. By the way, those are the only three, these and no others, these and no more, that the President may call forth the militia to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections, and repel invasions. Whereas our U.S. Constitution gives the President authority over any member of this state's militia only when called into the actual service of the United States, and whereas our Constitution reserves to each state the appointment of officers and the authority of training the militia according to the discipline prescribed by Congress, whereas each state accordingly has the common law responsibility to provide practical standards for its militia. Number one, the kind of firearm and the amount of ammunition each militiaman must himself provide for himself, keep and bear the training, discipline, and skill with this firearm, to which he must attain at his own cost. Number three, and any penalties for failure to do so, or for failure to so do. Whereas our U.S. Constitution bars infringement of each and every individual's God-given right to keep and bear arms, forbidding any act that interferes with this individual and fundamental right to keep and carry a gun. Whereas there is no other kind of fundamental right but individual rights. There is no such thing as a group right. That's a fiction. It doesn't exist. Rights are individual. Fundamental rights are individual. Why? Well, because our Maker is interested in individuals. And he is interested in putting those individual rights right on you, individually, and giving you with that right. It's a jurisdiction. You have several jurisdictions as an not as an American, as a member of Adam's race, for crying out loud. Duties and responsibilities. Some of them, well, God gives them direct to you. Whereas our U.S. Constitution bars infringement. That means there's no intermediary between you and your Maker. No church, no hierarchy, no priesthood, no government, no educational institution, no university, no secret society between you and your God. Under the dome of heaven, as John Wycliffe put it. Whereas our U.S. Constitution bars infringement of each and every individual's God-given right to keep and bear arms. Yeah, we did that one. Whereas there is no other kind of fundamental right, did that one. Whereas our U.S. Constitution's Amendment 2 states that security... Hi, Dan. I see you just joined up. States that security and freedom at the same time are possible only as each militiaman of each state fulfills his duty in accord with our U.S. Constitution's four militia clauses. Whereas, accordingly, in order for our state to have the security of a free state, Amendment 2 bars the national government or any state government from interfering, infringement, with any one of the people's non-delegable right and duty to keep and bear arms. Let me back up again. Non-delegable. It is the non-delegable duty of every able-bodied male to keep and carry a gun. He can't delegate it to somebody else. He can't put it off on his wife. He can't put it off on his daughters or his neighbor. Now, that doesn't mean, again, that doesn't mean that the female of the species should not, could not, carry a firearm and become proficient with it. But it does mean that the male of the species has a duty. It's something that he will answer for if he doesn't do it. Whereas Congress has neglected our U.S. Constitution's mandate to provide rules for training the militia of the several states. I suppose it is true still in our own country that only males, the law requires males to register for the draft. That's a vestige of that idea. Of course, we held on to that idea for a long time. And I say often, I want to say again, because if I don't say it, I'll be responsible and I'll suffer the consequences of having not said it. Only a nation of cowards would push, promote, or even allow their daughters and their wives to face shrapnel and bullets. That's a sickness to think such a thing. And our country has moved in that direction. It's inexcusable. It's bad enough that men have to do that kind of stuff. But that's what God has said. Whereas Congress has neglected our U.S. Constitution's mandate to provide rules for training the militia of the several states, whereas the militia of our several states and the offices it fills are unique from any standing army or police forces, accordingly, each of our U.S. Constitution's assignments of responsibilities respecting the militia of the several states are non-delegable and unassignable to any regular or reserve army, navy, or national guard, or to any police force, or any other bureaucracy or government agent. The government cannot assume the duties of the militia. It's not possible. They can say they're assuming those duties, but they can't. Because the militiaman's duty, having been given direct from his maker, it's a duty of self-defense and defense of family and country and land. That duty, what is given direct from your maker, is non-delegable. Oh, you can say somebody else will do it, but you'll answer for it. You will always, that's like saying, for instance, that here's another non-delegable duty, the education of your children. You can send your children to the government school. You can send your children to parochial school. You can send your children to the neighbor or the church, Sunday school, but all of those institutions and folk won't answer for the education of your children in the final day. You will answer for it as a parent because that's a non-delegable duty. Well, God gave it to you. You're responsible for the upbringing of your children. You brought them into the world. Or you've assumed the responsibility if you've adopted children, for instance. And no matter who else does it, you're responsible. You can delegate. You can give off the doing of it to somebody else, but you're still responsible. That's all I'm saying. Well, that's saying a mouthful, though. Well, let's get down to whereas our U.S. Constitution requires each state to organize, discipline, and train its own militia. Yes, it does. And, of course, we have court cases. I've listed some here, not to mention the clauses of the Constitution. Whereas both Congress and the several states have neglected and violated the mandates of the people by our U.S. Constitution's four militia clauses. Whereas our U.S. Constitution now depends upon no other class of persons to protect the rights and freedoms of the people and of this state except the militia of the several states. Whereas the state must never neglect its Constitution-required duty under our Second Amendment to never infringe upon the common law right of the people to keep and bear arms, but to always encourage the people to keep themselves armed and skilled in the use of arms. Does our government encourage us to keep ourselves skilled in the use of arms? Or that'd be encouraging the law? Or are they encouraging the opposite? I never thought of this until recently, and I'm almost to the end here. But when I was in high school, we were taught firearm safety and marksmanship. That hadn't been, well, it's been 50 years, I guess. Been a long time ago. Seemed like yesterday. But that's how much we've changed. That's how much we've changed. How much we've gone the wrong direction. From teaching boys in high school firearm safety. And I went to a state school, a government-supported school, and we were taught that. And I have to stop and consider. Things change over time slow enough that I don't see the difference, I guess. But I'm thinking of it now as I get older, and there is a big difference, and it's not good for us. Finally, and we'll stop here, this is the last whereas clause in this model state militia statute. A lot of whereas clauses recounting the reason for this statute. Whereas, unless the people of this state fulfill and enforce our U.S. Constitution's fourth militia clause, the federal government will gain an unconstitutional monopoly of force and power and will oppress both the states and the people, as is now seen. Therefore, it was whereas, now it's therefore, in recognition of the foregoing, the people of this state hereby enact this state militia act. Well, I encourage you to get it and look at it, and then that's just 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, just 6 short pages after that. The militia act isn't that long. I tried to be compact. It fell together pretty good, I thought. I think it had some typos, and I've been fortunate enough to have people catch a few of them, but the book, The Militia of the Several States, is now in our curriculum form, thanks to some of the folks that are helping in L.A., and I appreciate them very much. And you can obtain a copy. I'm going to leave it up to Gerard. I think it's on the website, but I'm not privy to whether or not it's available to be obtained yet, although you can obtain the book at Amazon.com. Just type in Brent Allen Winters, Brent Allen, A-L-L-A-N, Winters, and on Amazon's site, and I think it'll come up. And Gerard, maybe if you're there, you can say something about whether or not it's available on the website.
Yeah, you can find it on the right-hand side of our website on every page. If you go down and look on the right-hand side, and you'll see the picture of your little of the booklet, the pocket handbook, and if they click on that, they go directly to your page where you introduce it and take them to a place for sale.
But is so the course is
go,
the course
go take a look at that, and you can click on it and you'll see where it goes. But go ahead.
Yeah, is the course available?
The course is available, up and running. People are joining it now.
Okay. Well, thank you, John, for letting me say a few words, and Gerard.
Thank you. That's on a tab on the top on the blue bar, the course, right, okay. John? To find the course. Okay, I guess if we're ready, thank you, Brent. We'll go into the questions and answer. I see it looks like Heather Lee was up but muted. I'm going to unmute her.
Hello.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, good. So what's your question?
Well, my question is concerning the unconstitutionality that the judges proclaim in these pirate courtrooms. I am wondering, in time past, I've actually been jailed for that, and I'm wondering if there is something where you're putting together, as mentioned, some assembly of taking them to task for such things. I can prove it in the transcript. I came up against a judge in this county, in my county, in Michigan, and he quite directly put me in chains and dragged me off to jail.
Yeah, as they're wont to do. They do that. And that's why we're going to
lay
it at the feet of the Supreme Court, because it's their job to police those lower courts. So ultimately, the Supreme Court is responsible to police them. And so that's what we're that's the paper that John, that's the next one that's going up there, is to put them on notice that they need to fix these things that are going on in the lower courts, and we have filed paperwork to that effect. They know where it is. They know, you know, I don't know, you know, what you did with your particular case, but, you know, once they get moving on that, you got to make sure that you have something filed in there ready to go in so that they'll fix it. But, you know.
So, so what is the procedure there with Jim? Just getting a case. What would I ask Jim?
Well, you know, I don't know what your case pertained to. Like we're right now, we're doing non-judicial foreclosures and stuff. We may not have a form. I mean, it's basically the same thing, you know, as far as how you fill it out for the Supreme Court. And basically it is the Supreme Court's job, you know, that's where you go. If you were going to go after that judge in that court, you'd end up in the federal court. You'd end up in the Supreme Court anyway, because the local court doesn't have jurisdiction to fix it, because they're the ones, you know, doing the dirty deed. Right. So it would end up in the Supreme Court. Now, I don't think we have one. I don't know what your instance is. We don't have to get into it. But even if we don't have it, you still can move your case into the federal court for cause. And actually, once this paper is written, you can wait till we lay it at the Supreme Court. You could mention that in your case. You could say, as per the case that was laid out by National Liberty Alliance to the Supreme Court to fix and censure and overturn these lower court judges. You know, we expect them to come out with some sort of a proclamation that will fix them itself. You may not have to go to court. I mean, if they act, your problem is done. You know what I mean? Because then they have to fix it, you know?
Yeah, but remember, we're doing this from the perspective of the grand jury. So just briefly in, 5-10 words or less, what is your court case about?
My court case? It was a simple matter of an irrigation company breaking my pump, and I went to court for it, and of course the judge threw it over to the commercial
judge. Of a case we wouldn't be handling now, but you see, we're spearheading the process, and we're going after ultimately fraud where due process is not applied and people are robbed of their property or their liberty, very particularly from the government. And of course the whole case is really all about dealing with subversion against the United States of America by enemies both foreign and domestic, and clearly the courts, these judges in the courts are the enemies of the people, and so that's the cases we're dealing with. In order to get into the courts at some point, because we're putting the pressure on them, and the deep state, you know, is going to eventually be taken out of the process here. And when that happens, when they go down and they're gone, there will be a huge power vacuum, and it will be filled by someone, and it must be the people. And that's what we're trying to prepare the people for, is to fill that power vacuum. Once the people fill that power vacuum, that means we're taking over the committee man process, we're organizing the militia, and we are also establishing the administrations in every county, 4 people in every county, in order to properly orientate and assist the trial and the grand juries. And then at that point, then you'll have access to courts, true courts of justice, where justice will be applied and controlled by the people. And when that happens on the grassroots level, then you'll be able to go to them. So working with us to help us meet that goal by participating with us as much as possible and maybe becoming a committee man and maybe even becoming a court administrator, an administrator for the juries, or even just financially backing us or just helping us in any way. We've got committees going on, all kinds of things. But at the end of the day, you will then be able to take your case and get justice, even if the court case closes down. It's fraud. And there is no such thing as statutes of limitations in common law courts. So when that happens, you'll be able to bring your case in. The only thing that restricts a court case from going forward in the sense of, they talk about particularly that there is no, goodness, I just said the word a minute ago, statute of limitations. So they say there's statutes of limitations. But really, in common law, the only statute of limitation is the inability to be able to produce the case because it's too old, the witnesses are gone, can't be found, maybe died, documents along
the
way are available.
I can get the transcript.
But as long as As long as you have that documentation, you can go back to your court case 10 years from now to get justice. And why did you wait so long? Well, I waited so long because I couldn't find a court of justice. They finally opened up, and here I am. I want justice. You see, it's really that simple. That's natural law.
And even the courts we have today, if you can prove fraud, there's no statute of limitation of fraud. You know, I mean, that's what the IRS claims. They can go back as far as they want if they think there's fraud, right? There's no statute of limitations at that point.
Wonderful. Okay. And P.S., I am helping in every aspect. I just joined, and I am helping Jim now and other things like that. So I've just been learning all the ins and outs. Thank you.
We appreciate it, and that's the thing to do. Like John said, let's get it moving along. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So next, I got Dan from the Carolinas. Go ahead, Dan. You're unmuted.
Thank you, sir. Once again, my issue is a comment versus questions, and I want to applaud tonight again. Outstanding job. Started out with Mr. John. A lot of people that might have come in a little bit late, generally speaking, if you hear this again, you will hear him what he expounded on government by consent and telling us the simple plan of bringing what should be for we the people back for us as to our inalienable rights and for the best for this country and for our kids to follow on and have something to look forward to with our homelands here and what it is all about. And then I want to certainly commend again Mr. Allen, Brent Allen Winters there. And I must say, last week I faxed in two different well-prepared documents. I don't know whether Mr. John and Mr. Brent had a chance to review those yet, but if Mr. Brent might add something or Mr. John, either one or anyone else, I feel like that the information was footnotes enough and in a good form that would be like a precipice for what maybe a lot of people would like to know how to gain, and that would be a common law land trust for their homestead or their lands or what have you. And I think that information that I sent could be a good start for a precipice. I don't know how you guys feel about it, but that's what I wanted to kind of see if you did have a chance to look at it.
We're all interested in that. I mean, it's not on the front burner, but it's certainly something that we definitely believe that people need to do in order to secure their land, your property rights. And you need that land trust to separate it, you know, take it so that the government can't take it from you and tax it and do whatever they do, you know, whatever nasty methods they're using right now to keep us from actually owning our land. So I think that's a big interest in LA. You know, there's a lot of people looking to do land patents, and we haven't had any time to really get into that, but it's certainly something that we will be interested in. So if you've got something that kind of nails that down, whether it's a common law land trust or anything to do with securing the title, so to speak, I'm sure we're interested.
Well, let me say this. I actually sent two faxes in, and the other one I thought was so well typed up. It's all typed up and well stated for anyone to follow through, but it was actually had a title of redress of grievances. And I don't know of anyone, I don't know of anyone that will ever attend each and every night that eventually they would not have appreciation for what those documents, I'm going to call them brief documents, that would be assistant or a guideline or encouragement for them and how to proceed and of course, take the instructions each and every Monday night as to how to proceed, you know, in a court of law. And, of course, in the closing, usually the case is that you guys are trying to educate us how that we're in, find ourselves a lot of times in a court that doesn't have jurisdiction, and then if there's fraud, et cetera, whatever, then sometimes you guys could give us, each individual that has a case, some help if there is fraud present and there was no due process of law. So I hope maybe what I said there might ring home to a lot of people that attend this conference, and I thought it was an excellent conference tonight.
Dan?
Yes, sir?
Are you out of the hospital yet?
Yes, sir, sure am, and thanks for asking. And I must say that how I get high on America is to get on Monday night, and it helps me rebound from that hospital stay that I had just recently.
Well, I'm glad to hear it.
Yes, sir, thank you. Yes, sir, thank you very much. And I am appreciative of you asking, and I am feeling quite improvement. So it was God sent for the surgery that I had. I've never had surgery before, guys. But this one was God sent, and it was very timely. So I'll put it that way.
Yeah. Well, that's good. That's one thing.
Yes, sir.
If our healthcare system has a lot of fails, but one thing they're good in is mechanical surgery. When you need something done, nobody can do it any better than they do that today.
Sometimes
they're not really good in chronic health care, but they're certainly good at keeping you alive and straightening you out and patching you up. They're real good at that.
Yes, sir. By the way, just two statements that I'd like to pass on tonight that might benefit some people. I believe I took some notes earlier there to what Mr. John said, and if I can reiterate, I'm trying to find the thing.
While you're looking for that, I just want to make an announcement. We only have one more person in the queue. So anybody that's been left hanging in the past should get in, because it's 11:30 or we're going to end early, which is unusual for us. Usually we got people chomping at the bit to get in. So right now there's only one person after Dan. So if you got anything that you didn't get to question or comment on in the past weeks, now's the time. So go ahead, Dan. You said you had some notes.
Yeah, hang on a second. Actually, we have two people left in the queue. There's a person above, the one from California, which you should use next. We accidentally muted. Oh, is that Dan online right now?
Yeah.
Okay, all right,
yeah.
Sorry. Nope, you only got one left.
Yeah.
Star 6 right. And a 1 to get into the queue.
Real quick, really, so we can have that other person to come on immediately. I take notes here and there, and I learned so much. And tonight, our mentor, Mr. John, mentioned, and I'll quote him, he said, silence is fraud when, and he's talking about an official generally, but yet he could be talking about when it says you have a duty to speak. And I thought about that in another way. When many people might see a crime that has occurred, they are under an obligation, just like if you were driving down the highway and you saw an accident immediately, you by law are required, or at least in our states, to contact the authorities immediately and stop and check on the parties that are, you know, involved driving the vehicle or vehicles, plural. And so, once again, silence is fraud when you have a duty to speak. I thought that was so profound. And then one other item that I, on that same note that I thought about in the past is this. And I quoted this one time to a clerk of court, and she kept pondering and saying it over and over, and here it go, here we go. let me see. It's a crime to conceal a crime. And guys, if I really, you know, felt up to it, and if we had time, I might would say a little bit concerning what's going on in Washington, D.C. Those jokers up there that we are paying ad valorem taxes for to do their job, they're doing what Mr. John has been detailing us to pass on socialism, especially the deep state. And so when you come down to it, they are holders of knowledge, and they are deceiving us, and they, and when they do that automatically it's a crime to conceal a crime. And so they know of the crimes, and matter of fact, I'm afraid too many of them up there in office are all criminals. They'd say it and need to be removed.
Yep.
So maybe they wouldn't speak up because they feel like they would incriminate themselves, and that's my thoughts for tonight.
Yeah, thank you very much. And you're absolutely right. A lot of them, they're only there because they got the goods on them. And if they don't have goods on them, they certainly work hard to get goods on them before they're done. Okay, our next person is Caleb Johnson. You've been unmuted. Oh, no, I guess it came up to,
there we go.
Is that Eugene, California, from California? Go ahead.
That's me. Okay, yes. I'd like to touch on what the previous caller just said about the failure to report a crime. Here's a crime. I'll expand on that. And then failure to report one's own crime is an additional crime.
No kidding.
In the government. Yes, they have a duty to honor the oath, which is, you know, to obey constitutional law, obey all laws. And so if they know a crime being committed and it's reported to them, say if they committed the crime and they don't report themselves, that's another crime for not reporting themselves. And that's how you go all the way up the ladder, as Liberty, National Liberty Alliance is doing. If they don't correct the problem, then they go above their head and add them to the list.
Right.
But yeah, the reason I wanted to touch on fiduciary. Fiduciary authority, authority to make decisions on behalf of the clients. But it's more than that. By definition, fiduciary is carries with it an ethical obligation to advocate for what's in the best interests of the clients. So to conduct themselves contrary to our best interest violates their oath and their status. And violators of oath lose their honor. Without honor, they have no jurisdiction, because the jurisdiction is granted during good behavior in adherence with their oath. It's a big circle. They have to honor their oath. They lose their honor, no jurisdiction, no authority.
That's right. So there's an awful lot of that going on.
Right. And as far as positions with National Liberty Alliance, I would like to volunteer to conducted to go wherever I may be utilized.
Okay, very good.
Right. We got.
Yeah, you can contact Jan if you go to the go to our website, nationallibertyalliance.org, and look at our directory there. You'll see a on the blue bar it says directory. Click on directory. And you'll see Jan's phone number and email address pretty quickly as you read down. He's our national director. And And you could talk with him, and you know, he can introduce you to other, some of the committees we've got going, or you might want to create your own committee for something that would be, you know, that would work with National Liberty Alliance with what we're doing. And he'll assist you in getting you to the right places and the right assistance and knowledge and so on.
All right, thank you. Yeah, I got an email I saw today. I went back to find it, and I couldn't find it. So we got a new phone, so I got to work the bugs out of it. But thank you.
Okay. You're welcome. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
God bless America.
Yes, sir. Okay, our next questioner is, looks like Caleb Johnson.
Hey, guys. Hey. I was just curious, besides working with National Liberty Alliance, I would like to start handing out pamphlets teaching people about their constitutional rights and the base fundamental of how people aren't getting due process of law in the lesser courts. And I just wanted some suggestions on how I might start organizing people, or at least getting the information out there besides pamphlets.
Yeah, well, you know, we had made our own books up, you know, like those little constitutional books.
Mm-hmm.
And we have different various ones. We had one for the sheriff, which is real handy, you know, when you're dealing with the sheriff. And then I don't know if John, you're still working on the update for that.
Yeah, they're pretty well, you know, they're out of print right now, but they are downloadable. We do have the sheriff's handbook, and we do have the jurist handbook. Available in PDF copies, so people can print them, you know, onto an 8.5 by 11 sheet. So that's one thing. To really get some good information on this, on what you might want to do, is you can go to our education tab, highlight our education tab, come down to weekly topics, and you'll find some stuff in here. You know, right now you can see natural rights versus civil rights might be something you want to read, and there's jurisdiction natural law. That really shows the difference between the two jurisdictions. There's on the top, there's law and equity. Again, focuses in on the two jurisdictions. There are only two jurisdictions that's available, that is lawful on the land, and that is law and equity. Equity is the exercise and or execution of the U.S. titles that are lawfully applied upon people who are in government. That's equity. Of course, law brings us to natural law, common law. That is decided by the people. No elected officials' opinions or thoughts or decisions are permitted in a court of law. Actually, there's quite a few people that work for the government that's in that court, but the judge is not a judge. Matter of fact, every judge, all judges are magistrates. If a person is a judge, in other words, they get to make decisions in equity courts, they also are qualified and they are also, magistrates. And a magistrate is an administrator, okay? That person doesn't make any decision, doesn't make any orders of themselves or anything of that nature. That magistrate is only there to administrate the justice and to represent the will of the tribunal. And the tribunal, of course, is the 12 jurists in that court. So when the 12 jurists come to their decision, that judge makes sure that it gets written down properly and the will of the tribunal is written down properly and put forward for execution through the sheriff or whatever process that needs to go to exercise that that decision. And all this stuff you can learn about, probably most of it right here. The other place you can go is you can go to the grand jury, highlight the grand jury tab, okay, and come down one line down and click on action against the judiciary. Now, we have memorandums in here. You know, you can look at the titles and kind of click on them and see if it will help you for what you're looking for. And a lot of the stuff that I just told you about on the one place under education, you'll find those same subjects right here under the memorandums. Even our papers that we have filed, if you read through them, all of this is, if you want to get educated, read all these papers. Just read them, okay? You'll see a lot of repetitiveness in the sense of using a lot of the same decisions, a lot of U.S. decisions from the court, and you'll also see a lot of codes and different things, documents, founding documents, comments from our founding fathers, referrals maybe to American jurisprudence or the Federalist Papers. So we document everything that we have here. So as you go through that, it's an education, okay, and you'll pull a lot of stuff or whatever it is that you're looking for through here. Anybody that's in court, I strongly advise them, go read our papers, because you're going to say, oh, I can use that paragraph, cut and paste it out. Oh, I can use that paragraph, cut and paste it out. Now, they're all in PDFs, so when you cut and paste them, the footnotes do not go along with it. So when you cut and paste and you see the footnote 35 or 2 or 106, whatever it is, you come down and highlight and cut and paste the footnote and apply it into your Word document appropriately, where you just cut and paste the contents. So you'll get a lot of stuff there, and you will get an education. And again, anybody going to court and you want to learn, and you're looking for ideas, you're looking for things that you can use in your case, you will find them in these papers.
Yeah, they should copy all those footnotes, because they're reusable in many cases, and I mean, we use them time and time again, and those are very handy to have.
Right, we do offer I've put my footnotes, I've got hundreds and hundreds of footnotes. And, I take a subject matter. For instance, I'm working on a case right now, and I have been collecting footnotes. Every once in a while I add a new footnote. But I'll have, for instance, I have a footnote in the Second Amendment, footnote on abatement, abortion, acquiescence, Board of Review, chemtrails, caps, just a whole slew of subjects here, appealing, jurisdictions, municipality, nisi prius, the meanings of these words, how they're used, all referring back into usually a lot of Supreme Court rulings. Black's law is exclusive throughout there. What is an infamous crime? What's the meaning of infamous? An infringement? What about an injured party? Everything, just a lot of them. And so what I have done, I put these in a zip folder, which is, you can find that on our website also. You can find that under education, I think. Let me go take a quick look. You go to education, and you come down a wee bit, and you click on court. This page just stops moving. Click on court forms, processes, and instructions. So you click on that. You go to that page. Now, to access this information, we ask people to be premium members. And that requires a person to, give $5 a month or more. So you're a premium, I think we call them a premier member or premium, I forget. But in any event, then you have access to certain pages, information, and the government by consent course. And that's only $60 a year. That's $5 a month. It's a cup of coffee and maybe a roll or a donut or a bagel or something once a month.
Just give it up. That book note file you got, that could be a book that you published, John. People would buy that. I'm telling you.
Well, that's true. I was thinking of putting that into the appendix. What do they call it? The appendix, I think. I'm thinking of putting it into the appendix of the book, the footnotes.
I think it's a very valuable tool,
Yeah, also,
people that want to do their own stuff.
The book right now is almost 600 pages, and it covers everything, everything I could think of. Whatever I miss, I'll catch it in round two, so to speak. But the book covers a lot of stuff. It's almost 600 pages, and then we have an appendix. Is that how you pronounce that? An appendix, I think.
Appendix.
No. Yeah, the back of the book where they have sort of extra things. I've got quite a bit there. Okay, and then I have links, to particular places throughout the site. For instance, if you wanted to learn about the Federalist Papers, you click the, you can highlight that, copy, because it's a book. you copy that link over into your put it into your URL area there. Mm-hmm. And you'll go to, for instance, we have the Federalist Papers, and you'll get a copy of the Federalist Papers in PDF form. You can click on that, open it up, save it to your computer, and then we have MP3s, lots of MP3s that reads all the way through the Federalist Papers, so you can listen or you can download all those MP3s and you can read. You can listen along as you're reading through the Federalist Papers and study them, making notes and so on and so forth, and really get a good education. Because if you want to know what the Constitution is all about and the meaning of the things in the Constitution and debates and why they came up with this final decision, you find that in the Federalist Papers and in the Anti-Federalist Papers, which is really focusing in on our rights and making sure that we have small government and not large government. That's what the Anti-Federalists are all about. That was led by John Adams, and also behind the scenes working with Thomas Jefferson. But anyway,
do we still have those MP3s of Trial by Jury by Lysander Spooner?
We have Lysander Spooner. I've got a link directly.
I'll tell you that.
You can go to that.
So interesting. I'm telling you that you couldn't get through this stuff in 20 years. It's a very interesting, the way it's laid out, it holds your attention, it really does.
Right, so we have Lysander Spooner written all out and also in the MP3 forms, and this is an important one, people may overlook this, but we have the harmony of the Gospels through the Gospel of Mark, and it covers Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John using Mark as the pivot point, and that's all in MP3s, and it is probably one of the most valuable, no, not probably, it is one of the most valuable studies anyone can do, because redemption can be achieved from that. But that clearly will assist you in natural law, of course, because, this is God's word. But anyway, and so much more. This is just the tip of the eye. I got pages and pages of information linking in to different places on the website, and all that's in the book. Now, I wanted to add my footnotes in there, and I also wanted to add court access in there, and which shows people how to write a paper, how the papers should look, what papers do you need to file court papers. It gives you the procedures, the process, and ideas, and also goes through different things to show you what kind of a court case, I'm trying to think of the word for this, an action, okay, certain
right.
actions, and what the process of, for instance, fraud. If you were going after someone for fraud or a government for fraud, you'll find out you have to have 3 points covered in that to achieve a balance of the meaning of fraud and to...
They call them causes of action?
Causes of action. That's
right.
I think that, well, yeah, I think that would probably be the words for that.
Mm-hmm.
Causes of, matter of fact, it is, causes of action.
Right.
Got quite a bit of that in there. So what I may do is a second book for that, because I wanted to put it into this book because I wanted to give people everything. But it's too long. It's too big. I mean, if I put all of it in there, it will be over 1,000 pages, maybe even. And if I put all the stuff in there, it would be a couple of thousand pages. And it's just too much. I think I've noticed some books out there. I looked at Brent's book. I think he's up to about 600 or 700 pages. I saw the Making of America was about 600 pages. There are other books that are really good. For instance, The Real Thomas Jefferson, it's about about 680 pages. You got The Real George Washington, The Real Benjamin Franklin. Benjamin Franklin, I think, is about 300, maybe 400 pages. I thought, well, okay, my book at 600 pages probably works well. But if I go too much more than that, I don't know. So I may do a second book on the other part.
Okay.
But if you go into court, these are great reference books to pull in, and you can pull out all kinds of stuff while you're in court, So
I logged into the website. I wasn't before when you said about the footnotes under the Educations tab. Where would I find them underneath the Education tab?
Yeah, if you go to Education tab, come down to all the way down almost the last one before the last. It's Court Forms, Process, and Instructions.
All right, got it.
Okay. Now, if you click on that, you'll find yourself on a page I believe that should tell you that in order to get access to this page, you need to be a premier member. And again, a premier member is someone, of course, is a member, but is donating $5 a month or more. And so as soon as you, you know, do that, then your access will be given to you for that. And that's $60 a year, so it's not a lot of money. And as I mentioned, it's, you know, coffee and a donut once a month, give it up, and that's the cost to get all this information. We used to give it all for free, and I'd love to continue to give it all for free, but we just never get enough donations to survive. And but since we moved to this thing with the Court of Access course and also this information being given free and some other stuff, it be given to people who are premium members, you know, now we are getting at least enough money to survive. So anyway.
Okay, got two more people I would like to get to. I don't want to leave anybody sitting in the queue today.
All right, thank you for your time.
I got like 9 minutes. So if we're done, I'm going to move to Cody from Illinois. Go ahead. Or no, actually it jumped up. It's Lee from New Hampshire, excuse me. This thing's working backwards tonight.
Yeah, you know what I do, Gerard, is I click on that little thing in front of the name, the phone there.
Yeah,
so you can get it right for the top and move down. So.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know why it reverses like that.
I don't know. I've never done that to me before, but I know it. Well, I've been using the phone last time, so I don't know. I think you're right. All right, Lee from New Hampshire.
All right, so you were talking about the committeeman process and their whole their job. So I was wondering if what happens if someone's seeking office and the committeeman finds that they are not qualified?
Well, you don't carry their papers. You see, they need people to carry their petitions in order to get put on the ballot, and so that's why. Hence, that was the party that used to get the people in. Because, you know, like if you're not in the Democratic or the Republican Party, you can't get on a ticket, basically.
Right.
You know, and they're so overwhelmed that if you're on a conservative ticket or whatever like that, you're not going to get in unless you have a lot of, let's say, Republican friends that are willing to jump over and pull the conservative lever.
So, and anybody, go ahead.
But the committee man is the guy who really facilitates the getting the candidate on the ballot, and that's why they'll listen to the committee men. Because if a committee man gets a bad taste in his mouth, any elected officials, and some of these judges are elected too, by the way, they're very careful not to upset the party or the committee men. So as a committee man, you go see a judge, you got some clout.
Yeah, and if anybody comes in and wants to run for a particular office, and they don't know the Constitution, they don't understand the jurisdiction of that particular office and the powers and so on, it's not that you don't want to totally deny them. You send them to a place to get educated, like National Liberty Alliance. Tell them, take the civics course, take the militia course, take the government by consent course, and then come on back, because then you'll know the Constitution. We'll quiz you a little bit on things, and if we feel confident and comfortable with you, we're going to put you on the ballot. But we're going to also ask you to make sure that you're going to uphold your oath, because if you don't, we'll pull you out in 90 days. We'll recall you. So as long as you understand that, and then go forward. Now, as far as our peers, you know, as committeemen, if we're committeemen and we realize that certain committeemen don't know these things, it's a wrongdoing for them to take these positions without knowledge. It's a wrongdoing for us to show people on how to become a committeeman without educating them, when you really think about it, because we're getting ignorant people, ignorant to the Constitution, that is, coming in to bring other ignorant people into the positions. And again, we just come back to the same problem. But it is our duty as a citizen or one of the people here in these United States, it is our duty to know these things. It is the duty of our government to have made sure that these courses are taught in school. And since they're not doing that, then we will do it, and we will put it in our schools, and we will press the government to write the proper legislation to require any school that opens up that they give a a course in civics, a course in the Constitution, American history, American heritage, you know, who are founding fathers. I mean, look, we're going to turn the book that I've written, we're going to turn that into textbooks for schools. And so we'll break it up and run a curriculum through that, just like we did with our courses. But it'll be focused towards, you know, the children on the younger age all the way up into high school. And anybody going to school and coming out of 8th grade or even the 12th grade, and if education was given properly, there's probably no reason more to have any more than 8 or 9 years of education. And anything beyond that should be in a college level where you're really looking to become get a doctorate in something. But other than that, that should be sufficient and far superior to the 12 grades that we have. And again, by the time a person comes out of 8th or 9th grade, they should be able to walk in a court of law themselves and represent themselves. They should understand the process and procedures to write a paper and to file it through and push it through. They should know the law and what applies to them and what doesn't, what the difference is between, you know, equity and law and so on and so on and so on. And again, these things, you know, may seem to be overwhelming or complex or too much for you, but it's only because you're from the outside looking in. Once you get into these things, not only does it empower you and you find yourself drawn into these things because it is so powerful, you know, to look into our founding fathers and to look into how courts work and our government was structured and the law. I mean, and we're not talking about statutes. You don't need to remember all that silliness. I don't want to call it silliness, really. It doesn't apply to us. But, you know, but you learn the basic idea of what statutes are and what it's for and how it is to be applied. So once you start getting into this, you'll find that this stuff is really pretty simple and logical. You'll pick up a new vocabulary, in a sense, by, you know, using new words or use new phrases. And look, that just comes to you. You know, how does a baby learn to speak? He's just around people speaking all the time. You're going to pick it up, and these words will spill out of your mouth one day. You know, sometimes you see a baby say something and they look surprised that they even said it, you know, a young child anyway. And that's the same way with an adult or anyone else in any education at any level.
Now, what was that you were saying about 90-day recall process? What's that about?
Right. The committee man can pull an individual out in 90 days. Okay, there is a process that is, it's not necessarily law, but, you know, it works. There's a window of, I think it's 6 weeks, okay, that you go and go get petitions to take someone out of office. So if you file a paper, a notice to the Board of Election, for instance, letting them know that you are going to, we the committeemen, we're the people, and people can do this on their own, but you need a lot of people. But, you know, we're going to recall an individual, so you file the papers. Once you file those papers, you have a 90-day, well, it's a six-week window, I think it is. I have to go look to make sure, but I'm pretty sure it's six weeks. So what's that, 7, 14, 21, 28, 35, 42? So it's 42 days. You know, so you have 6 weeks from the point that you file the notice to get all the signatures onto the petitions and bring it back to the Board of Election. Once that is accomplished, it's proved. Okay, and then after being proved, the special election is announced, and they run for the replacement to remove that person and run for a new person to be placed into office. And that process takes about 90 days from beginning of filing to the actual election day.
All right, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay, and last victim here is Cody from Illinois. Go ahead.
Yeah, good evening, gentlemen. Been hashing out this grand jury situation. I was reading the U.S. versus Williams Supreme Court case 1992, mm-hmm. and it talked about the grand jury being a function of the Bill of Rights and not the three branches of government. But so to get teeth on what we're doing, I mean, are the, like, for example, would Governor Northam argue, well, you know, your grand jury was composed of people from outside my state, so that doesn't apply to me. But yet, if it's a constitutional function, the Bill of Rights, I don't know if it matters. you know, basically, we, you know, thank God the rally today, there was no bloodshed, but at the same time, we keep giving these gangster government officials more time and more time to suck out our sustenance. It is tiresome that we need to either get teeth to what we're doing or we need some revolution. And I'm trying
to figure out. Look at the bottom line is, you know, we can solve all this by taking control and consenting to our government. That's what we are teaching here, to consent to government. If we consent to government, we say yay or nay, and there's processes to do it. It's through the courts and through the political process, committeemen and the administrators for the courts, or shall I say the juries, or ultimately in the grand jury and the trial jury. That's where we decide. Government comes to us and say, hey, we'd like to get an indictment on somebody. Can we please have that? And the people hear that, and if it's a free and independent jury, you know, then they'll make good decisions. And they may say, no, you can't have, we're not going along with that. Take a hike, forget about it. Or they'll say, yeah, okay, we'll give an indictment on this. And then, of course, it's the people who decide whether they're innocent or guilt. They get to listen to the case. They're the tribunal. They're the judges, not these clowns in capes and hammers running around the place. You know, the people are the power. And so they get to decide that. And then at the end of the day, the people get to decide, well, how can we restore these people? How can we restore the injured party? And how can we, you know, how can we restore the individual who is violating? We need to bring them back into the community, bring them back under the law, bring them back and have them bring to a repentant position. So you create a punishment that benefits the injured party and brings this person to possibly to a repentant position where they see the error of their way. And that's biblical. That's what the system is set up. Now, it could be a jail sentence, too. You know, some things probably would require that.
No, but how do we get there? This is my point. Like Northam, he's going to say, well, your grand jury doesn't apply.
No, that doesn't work. No, he's wrong. Because if you look at the, first of all, the grand jury, its standards are looser. They're not deciding innocent or guilt. And especially on a federal case, they'll take a grand jury out of Utah and indict somebody in New York. They do it all the time. That's not right, though, Gerard.
That is not correct. I mean, maybe there'd be a reason to do that, and if you can make a case to make a reason,
well,
we've got to go to another state.
They did that because some of these judges and stuff in New York, everything is so wrapped up over there, they had that special prosecutor, and he used grand jurors from another state. I mean, it's still, you know, it's a constitutional issue.
It has to be the peers, and if you go in even into the code, it talks about the fact that the people within your county, within your area, okay? Mm-hmm. And I think the boundary lines are the counties. And so if you break a law, whatever county you're in that's going through that process, it's got to be the peers within that county. And that works perfect. Look at, we don't need to have a grand jury, for instance, brought together in a federal district court. If there is an application to convict someone, you know, if they want to get an indictment, for instance, all they need to go is to the grand jury in that county, which is sitting already in the courts, the state court within the county. All they need is go there and say and produce their case there to get their indictment if the jury goes along with them.
Then they can go into
the federal court. But hold it. Then those people that are chosen as a trial jury still has to be chosen from that county also. I can tell you, and you know this, I think everybody realizes this, you know, there's Ulster County across the river from me. There's Orange County across the river from me. There's Putnam County and Westchester County south of me. There's Columbia County north of me. There's Albany County north of me. You know, all these counties are very different. Each county is different. There's an attitude. There's just something a little different about the people of each county. So you want to be tried by the peers. And there could be reasons to go out. That's a possibility.
Well, what he's saying is
our
indictment that we're going to put on Nordstrom, he's not going to listen to that. He's going to say, you're not my peers.
Oh, yes, we are, because we are in every county and every state. That's why we are the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. We don't come from just New York State. We had to choose a federal district court to launch this. And it makes sense to do it from here, close by to where we're working this case. But as far as the jurors are concerned, they're from New Mexico, they're from Nevada, they're from Missouri, they're from South Carolina.
I want jurors from my county and my
state. They can have their trial juries from their state and their county, absolutely.
Their trial juries, exactly.
Right. But the grand jury... Look at this is a federal problem. We're going after the U.S. Congress. We're going after the Supreme Court of the United States. We're going after the federal district courts. Okay, and all of that is federal government. And there, it doesn't matter where you are at that point, because the whole nation.
We're inviting the governor.
Yeah, it's the whole nation. Look at it would be a wrongdoing if we were doing these things from one little area. Maybe you get 12, 15, 20, 30 people from here in this county or two or three counties here in New York, and we go exercise these things. I wouldn't say that it would be a wrongdoing, but it's not as powerful. We have people in all the counties, or the potential of people in all the counties. We have people from all the states.
Well, what,
they have unified. Every county has come together to agree on this. It took us years to do this. Every county has been visited. Every county has been laid out the program, what we're doing, and the people say, yeah, we like it, we're in, and we have collected memberships across the nation as we've moved along. It took years to do this. Then those counties came together forming the unified state grand juries within each of the states. And then the states came together to form together the unified United States common law grand jury to deal with the federal problem from the all the states. Because we are, the entire United States is the jurisdiction for this case.
But what's the historical, legality of it? Is
we the people decided it, and it makes sense. It's common sense. It's you can't argue the idea. Other than that, you say, well, okay, we can't do nothing. Let's let them just totally destroy us, destroy our constitution, put us in jail, do whatever they please. And
why can't we take the federal prosecutor there in Virginia and demand that he use that indictment then?
Because he's not going to look at. Well, you mean, I'm sorry, take the federal prosecutor to what?
Well, I'm saying the indictment that we did the other day. If uh-huh. If we can get a prosecutor that's.
Right. We were turning to Jeff Sessions. Now we're turning to William Barr. Every case we do, every indictment we do, we send him a copy and ask for prosecution. Now, he's not responding to that yet, and that's okay. He's got a lot of cases that they've indicted, they're sitting on, and they haven't responded yet because they're going to do it at the right time. We're expecting that he is going to do something with it at some point. It's his duty. He's the law. He must. And I heard him speak not long ago. I forget to what group. I think it was the Federalist or something. He was speaking, and it was pretty powerful. Matter of fact, you should go up and listen to it. You can get it up on our website, nationallibertyalliance.org. Come under, I think I put it under news. And if you click on news, I'll tell you in a second, I'm scrolling on it. Should
well,
be up
been
towards
more
the
gun
top.
Laws under Trump than, I think, Obama, so who knows what's really going on with Trump.
Oh, Trump's a good guy. There's no doubt about it. Just forget it. He's good. Yeah, it's the fourth one down. If you go to news, click on news on a blue bar, and you'll see the first video, second video, third video, the fourth video, the fifth, the sixth video down. It Barr speaks to the Federalist Society, a National Lawyers Convention. Powerful speech. And let me tell you something.
They don't indict any judges. I mean, some of these judges need to be. I mean, if it's illegal for a cop to have quotas, they should at least have quotas every year of how many federal judges they get rid of.
Well, of course, quotas are no good either way. We don't want to do the horrible things that they do, but we just want to apply the law. Someone breaks the law, we apply it. And if no one's breaking the law for a period of time, then we're probably doing our job as the people. We're in trouble because the people aren't educated and the people are not doing their duty. And people who are listening in, a lot of them are not jumping up and saying, let me go do what I got to do. They may be thinking the other guy's doing it, but they're not. But let me tell you one other thing. This was very, very, very powerful. I saw videos from Frontlines with Steve Bannon, okay? And there were two parts, I think, or three parts. Let me see. I think it was two parts. And I put a video in between because there was a referral to that issue. But in any event, each one of these videos was like about an hour and a half long, and it was done about a year, maybe a year and a half ago. And he revealed so much insight back then, and today you can see everything that he spoke about, and was it's running exactly as he said. But that's under, no, if you go under
they're
Q.
They're just buying time for their criminal activity. You guys are familiar with the FASB 56, the Federal Accounting Standards Board, which basically now says they can lie to the people and keep things hidden. I mean.
Yeah, but that's not lawful. Doesn't matter what they, look at, it's fraud. It's fraud anyway. It's not lawful.
Yeah,
but anyway, just for, to finish off to what I was saying, if people want to see these videos with Steve Bannon, and I really, people should go see these videos, these two videos and the video in between concerning Trump, where hatred comes from. But you go to Q, highlight Q, come down to Steve Bannon, click on Steve Bannon, and start watching the videos from the top down. And like I said, the first three videos particularly, so much insight. It blew me away because I just recently watched it and I posted them.
Well, some of these federal prosecutors, I mean, you know, if there's historical significance to what we're doing, they should be able to run with those indictments.
Prosecutors are mostly, or almost all, if not all, bar attorneys. They're minions for the New World Order. They believe natural law has been abrogated by Rule 2.
And they've spent years picking these judges, and they've got things on them so that they, in the minute that they're going to do a ruling on something, you know, Clinton, this one, that one, it tells them, you go ahead and do that, we're going to bring this up. You know, that's why they put them on these planes and take them here and there so that they can get the goods on them.
And
it's so bad here in New York, and Trump understands it, that the Southern District of New York, he's down there trying to clean up because that's so corrupt.
Yeah, but I mean, what has Trump really done? I mean, he could fire so many different people in the feds. He's barely cleaned house.
That's not true. You're not paying attention. No, that's not true. Let me explain.
No, he can't. If he does that, say he's a dictator.
Yeah, look at
has to be done in an orderly fashion that they can't steal the narrative and then call the UN and say that he's a rogue president.
There is a plan, okay?
He's got military intelligence on his side.
Right.
Yeah, there is a plan. And if the people really want to know that plan, Q has been revealing that plan. And there is an individual out there, and he runs a news program. He does interviews. He does at least one a day, usually about 45 minutes, sometimes a little shorter, sometimes a little longer. And he also does an interview with interesting people that apply to what's going on here in the problem here in the federal government particularly. And it's X-22 Report. And if you really want to know what's going on, you go listen to that X-22 report. You go listen to the last six or eight or so X-22 reports, and you will become educated so much on where we're at, what's going on, and what's going on behind the scenes. And he explains everything, and there is a plan. And every once in a while, Q will come out and say, trust the plan, trust the plan. You know, you have to let things go. The whole plan really moved to where we're going coming up tomorrow. Okay.
It's been almost one term, 3 years. I don't know. He could have done a lot more firing and scaring a lot of these guys, but
what do they call it? The Monday morning quarterbacking. You're not there. You don't have the information he has, but he is revealing.
You're right. It's a lot harder job, but at the same time, there has been more gun laws under him than
the deep state is so deep and so big. It's not as easy as you think. If he came in and just started with a hatchet and started taking things out, he would have been pulled out of office a long time ago.
You know, they're not stupid. They put all these NGOs in doing their chemtrailing and that, and you can't. It's so hard to go in there and knock it out because they're non-governmental organizations. And for him to go in and try to take them out, it's a big process because you have to give them due process. The same, you know what I'm saying?
And by the way, are you familiar with Q?
I don't follow it at all.
Okay, well, then, you know, you're losing out. Let me tell you something. Q has said many times, and nothing has changed, trust Sessions. Okay, there's like 80,000 indictments, and maybe more. I heard it was 100-some-odd thousand.
He's out.
That's already sitting, and they're still sealed that are ready to open. and you have Barr coming in, and they're working on indictments. There's probably 100,000 indictments ready to open up. Now, a lot of them, there's been a lot of indictments that have been opened up, and arrests have taken place across the world, and even the Navy SEALs or the Marines have been sent out on different missions concerning to save people that are caught in the sex slave things, and also bringing people, large corporations and all these people involved with so many different things, bringing them under indictment, or they're resigning by the dozens
and
all
the
over the place.
The mainstream media doesn't report
doesn't
on any of that
unless you start bringing these people into court.
You're going to see it's happening in the next couple of weeks. Okay. 144,000 indictments, 16,000. I missed that. It fell away from me, Francine.
Well, you should just go look at the list of people that have resigned and left office and left corporations. That's all Trump doing the art of the deal. That's military intelligence going, because what they're doing, and look, if they have to do court cases for all these people, we'd be 100 years in court. What he's doing, he's going, we got this we got this sealed indictment. You just quit and go away, or leave your office in that, and we won't open that indictment. That's what's going on right now. And there's a list of all these CEOs, and these are all people that have been involved in child trafficking and Epstein Island and pedophilia and all this stuff. He's done more to stop it. You know, child trafficking has surpassed the money from illegal drugs in this country. That's how bad we are. And who do you think is doing the trafficking? They're trafficking, but they're trafficking them to our government officials. That's who's participating in this. All our congressmen, our senators, our judges, you know, they bring them over there and they get them sooner or later.
Well,
one way or the other.
Barr's dad was running that school where Epstein was teaching at, right? I mean, you heard that.
I heard some kind of wrong. I didn't actually.
Yeah, Epstein was a teacher at the Dalton School, and Barr's dad was, I think, the administrator or whatever there. So who knows how deep all this stuff.
Well, you know, look at these guys. You know, when you're up there where Trump is and where Epstein was, he was wooing everybody, and they got pictures of Epstein with Trump. It doesn't mean that Trump was cavorting with him. It just means that this guy was a mover and shaker and was at some of the events, and that's what they do. Like, they got one guy, he says, oh, I got pictures. Big deal. He's a celebrity. And people stop him all the time and says, let me take a picture. So this guy went around, made sure he got lots of pictures with him and Trump.
I'm not just talking
together.
About pictures. I'm talking about, you know, the current Justice Department Barr, you know, his dad was running that school. I don't know. It just seems, you know, too close for comfort.
Well, I'm just telling you that.
We don't even know if that's true anyway. I hear so much garbage and so much baloney, and you don't even know whether it's true or not. Then you ask them, well, what's your source? Where'd you get that information from? And they don't even know. Or they got it from someone else who regurgitated it from someone else who regurgitated it from someone else. Look, if you're going to make a statement like that, I say to you, I want to see the source. You may be right, and that doesn't mean guilt anyway, but it'd be interesting to know that. Look at this, pictures out there with Jeffrey Epstein with the president. That doesn't mean anything. He takes thousands of pictures a year, as he's just recently said, with people. Hey, can I have a picture? Sure, here, come on.
Well, if you could get pictures of him eating dinner or doing other stuff, I mean, just having pictures with him doesn't mean anything. You have to show a pattern where they're actually talking and working together on stuff. You know
and maybe
I mean?
Getting on that plane. What's the name of that plane?
Right, the Lolita Express.
The Lolita Express, yeah.
You know, and I remember Barr was in charge of the Justice Department when his prison either was an accessory to a murder or, you know, accessory to the escape.
Well, it's been established now, I heard, that it is a murder. And there's been another review by a coroner, a lot of reviewing of that, and it's been determined he was murdered. No doubt
about
it anymore.
No, he's just talking about some prison that Barr was controlling. Barr also had some sketchy background when he came in. He had something to do with that Ruby Ridge and that one FBI guy that they gave a raise to that killed a woman. I mean, he made some bad decisions
early in his career, and I didn't like him.
We got to move on also.
Okay.
Well, we're done anyway. There was nobody else.
You got Julie. No, Julie's out there. Give her 2 minutes or 5 minutes, and then we'll close down.
Wait a minute. I got to get back on. I'm on the NLA site. Hang on. Okay. Let me grab Julie real quick because we're way over.
Now, be careful now.
Okay. Thank you, Cody. We'll catch you next week.
Thanks,
okay.
Night,
we can finish up. We can follow up next week. Okay.
No
thanks.
Problem.
Yeah. Good call. Thank you.
Yeah. Bye. Julie, you've been unmuted. Are you there? I don't know the whole fleet. I don't know. My screen flashed. It said no participants. Am I
Hello.
Still on?
Can you hear
there
me?
You go.
There she goes.
Go ahead.
This is Julie in Montana.
Yes.
I have a statement to make and maybe a question to go with it. You know, the guy that I was helping with the habeas corpus, he's been locked up in federal prison for 19 years, and he got himself out about a week ago.
Wow.
So,
And that was the habeas corpus. Who did the habeas corpus? He did, or you helped him with it, or what?
I was his next friend.
Good.
On habeas corpus. But he got out from another organization that was doing things that for people that had been like long-term sentences, and they were working about as long as we were working with him, probably 3 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, we should try to get contact with that other group. Maybe we could work together.
Well, the other group was a group of lawyers that I can't remember what they're called, but I have it written down somewhere.
They go for people that have been in jail for a long, long time and try to get them out.
Yeah. So I'll find out more. I'm going to go and visit him. He's an elderly man, and he was in a wheelchair. So he was in Fort Worth in the medical unit, and I think they had recently moved him somewhere else. But so
they got him. They got him out based on a hardship, basically. I guess his age and his health.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've heard about
that. It was an extensive sentence, and his, he got sent up for bogus reasons in the first place, though.
Right, right. So, and then it becomes cruel and unusual punishment. And apparently, these lawyers have enough clout to manipulate the system, and the judges go along with it because they're a part of the same team, so to speak.
Yeah, and he hadn't heard from them for a long time either, so he was kind of giving up hope that either one of us could help him. And so I'm wondering if the habeas corpus might have helped move it along. That was my question tonight.
See, we have no way of knowing, though, for us.
Yeah.
Did the lawyers do a habeas corpus?
No.
No?
No, they were working on but, you know, he was in... He was in the mix for the habeas corpus that we had done recently, so...
All right. Well, that's interesting.
So it could have been the habeas corpus is what you're saying, and that could have contributed. Well, they should have told him. He should be able to know, you know, why he was released.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to let him know.
You don't think so? They just say, go get out of here.
Yeah,
I mean, that's smart on their part, right?
Well, yeah, it's also unlawful because they have a duty to speak.
Yeah, well, they...
You know, he's a Native American, and there's a lot of weird stuff that's happening on the reservations in Montana. It's really crazy. So I've been in contact with his daughter, and she's got all kinds of stories.
Still messing with the Indians, right?
Yeah, they're still messing with the Indians.
Yeah, that's a shame.
And he's also a Vietnam vet. So I thought, wow, some double whammy. And so he's in a veterans retirement home right now.
Meanwhile he was in jail for 20 years, huh?
Yeah, and that's he had a crazy. I think it was 19 years, and he had a 26-year sentence.
Yeah, thank you very much.
And his wife died in prison. She went to prison too, and she's gone now. So,
but was she an Indian also, a full-blooded Indian or no?
I think so.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's not good. But anyway,
yeah, it's the craziest case I've ever heard of, actually.
Right.
But I'll find out more. I'll go and visit him.
Yeah, and bring it back to us. Get in the queue and bring it back to us next time we're on. It's a good story, so.
Yeah, I told him not to get him on the Monday night call so he can tell his story, but.
That would be cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Have a good evening, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank
you,
Julie.
Good meeting, everybody. We're a little long, but that's okay. But everybody's done. I feel better about that. Okay. Mm-hmm. Have a good
night. And Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday.
Yeah. Okay. What's up with that?